Okay, thank you. My name is Rachel Feeney from Council Staff. I have a series of slides for you. I'm going to move fairly quickly through a timeline check-in as well as an overview of the Amendment 18 alternatives. You are scheduled to select the range of alternatives to be analyzed in Amendment 18 today, so I will provide that overview. It'll be largely a review from the April meeting. And then I'll spend more time talking about the work that the PDT and committee has done since the April council meeting, particularly on measures for the Handgear A fishery accumulation limits, peer review, Compass Lexicon report, and measures for the inshore Gulf of Maine. So these are the documents that are pertinent. You should have document number 5, the discussion document, out in front of you, as well as when we get to the inshore discussion, you'll want to have those first two, document 1 and document 4, in front of you as well. So in terms of timeline, if we get the range of alternatives approved today, there'll be a determination of whether an EIS or an EA will be necessary, will be prepared, and then the timeline will adjust accordingly from there forward, the EA being a more expedient timeline. Already been over the purpose and need and goals and objectives of Amendment 18, so I'll leave that for you to read on your own. The range of alternatives. We have alternatives regarding accumulation limits that would have either PSC caps or permit caps. Under the PSC caps, we have 6 different alternatives. Alternatives 2 through 5 would cap the PSC for each and every stock. Alternative 4A would cap the PSC for just 3 stocks. The next slide has the specific percentages. And alternative 6 would cap the PSC for all stocks collectively. That alternative was added at your April meeting. Under the permit caps, we have the no action alternative as well as a 5% permit cap. And here is the range of the PSC cap alternatives that are in the document. You can see that each alternative has various combinations of PSC numbers associated with them. Alternative 4A just applies to 3 stocks in the fishery, Georges Bank Cod, Gulf of Maine Cod, and Pollock. The rest apply to all the stocks. So Amendment 18 also regards U.S.-Canada trading. We have alternative 2 would allow in-season trading of U.S.-Canada stocks with 2 options, one which would allow the trading of sector sub-ACL, and option B would allow the trading of specific sectors ACE. We also have measures that would create a Handgear A fishery. Under the no action alternative, Handgear A permits would continue to be enrolled in either sectors or the common pool. And alternative 2, with several options within that alternative, creates a Handgear A permit sub ACL and a separate fishery that the Handgear permits could be enrolled in addition to making a third choice in addition to sectors or the common pool. Added in April was a measure regarding data confidentiality, that alternative 2 would have the data on ACE leasing within and between sectors considered non-confidential. The no action alternative, that data would remain confidential. So moving on to updates since the April Council meeting. The committee first discussed the Handgear A fishery with some feedback from the PDT regarding motions that were made in April. Regarding option I, which is the grandfathering option, it says for Handgear A permits enrolled in sectors not in the HA sub-ACL, the PSC associated with them may only be used by Handgear A fishermen using Handgear. All Handgear A permit holders who leased ACE in a sector in fishing year 2012 and 2013 may continue to do so. The PDT noted that this option is inconsistent with current practice in that NIMS cannot control ACE once it's allocated to sectors, so this would not be an enforceable option under current practice. So the committee discussed this option and has a motion to move this option to the considered but rejected section of Amendment 18. We then also discussed option A, which would be the option that would establish this sub-ACL. Particularly, they discussed that the catch history qualification years under option A are 1996 to 2006. The PDT input is that these qualification years are not exactly consistent with current practice because there's one hand gear A permit that uses 1996 to 2001. So the committee discussed this and is providing a motion today that would revise option A to be consistent with the current hand gear A qualification years that would kind of grandfather in that other permit. They also discussed the discard accounting option B. I put up on the screen for you the current three sub-options in the document. Sub-option A says account for the catch of other stocks in the other sub-component sub-ACL. Sub-option B, calculate an annual discard rate, subtract from the HA or other sub-component sub-ACL. And sub-option C would consider discards de minimis. Do not account for them under any sub-ACL, but explicitly consider them within the management uncertainty. The PDT input was that sub-options A and B need some further clarification, particularly on A, how would the discards of cod, haddock, and pollock, which would be under that sub-ACL, how would those be counted? What data would be used to calculate the rate, or when would the rate be applied? And on option B, what is the data that would be used to calculate this rate? Would it be estimates based on the common pool, which uses trawl and gill nets, or would it be based on some other information? So the committee put forward a motion for you today that would just revise sub-option B to calculate an assumed discard rate based on available data for long line and hook gear. At the beginning of the fishing year, assumed discards would be subtracted from the hand gear A sub-ACL and the other subcomponents sub-ACL accordingly. The committee didn't make any motions regarding what to do with sub-option A. I also want to note that term assumed discard rate has a pretty specific definition, so we might not want to use the term assumed discard rate, but just say estimate the discard rate based on that. Okay, moving on to the PSC accumulation limit alternatives. Alternatives 2, 3, and 4 currently in the document have a provision that says that the council may select one or more of the multi-species stocks to which this alternative applies. This language creates the potential to have a very large number of options in the document, far more than are feasible for the PDT to analyze, hundreds and hundreds of various combinations of these alternatives. Also, the alternatives have fairly distinct rationale for why the numbers are what they are. Only applying that rationale to a certain subset of stocks may not be consistent with the rationale that alternative was based on. So the committee discussed this issue and has a motion today that would strike that language from the document. They felt that there is alternative 4A, which applies to just three stocks, and were satisfied that there would be some option that would apply to just a subset. Uh, They also discussed alternative 3, option A, which was put in at the last council meeting, I believe, that states that the PSC acquired in excess of a cap for a stock may be split off a permit and redistributed to the fleet. The PDT discussed this concept and made the recommendation that you could apply this redistribution concept to all of the alternatives. Why are you just applying it to alternative 3? So the committee discussed that and redistribution in general and put forward an option, a motion today that adds an option that would apply to all of the PSC alternatives. That the PSC would be redistributed to the fleet on an annual basis, not permanently split off from the permits that may be above the accumulation limit cap. So that's it for committee work on the alternatives that are in the document. We also last week had a two-day peer review of the Compass Lexicon final report, which makes recommendations regarding whether there's market power in the fishery and recommends accumulation limits. That review was coordinated by the Northeast Fisheries Science Center on our behalf, chaired by Eric Thunberg, who's a member of our Science and Statistical Committee. We had three external panelists, one international from Norway. June 12 was a public discussion where the Compass Lexicon was present and gave an extensive presentation and discussion of the work that they did. And then the panel stepped through their terms of reference, evaluating the work that they did and their conclusions and recommendations. June 13th was closed to the public. It was just the review panel and a couple of staff members, myself included, where they had a chance to talk about the work and formulate their findings. On July 21st, or round about that time frame, we're expecting a consensus report of the review panel as well as individual reports from each of the panelists. So it would be inappropriate for me at this point to speak to the conclusions that they're making, their panel results. We'll have to wait on that one. So finally, a couple slides regarding the motion that the council made in April about inshore Gulf of Maine. The council passed the following motion: that further analysis and development of measures to be included in Amendment 18 that would address potential concentrations of effort in the inshore Gulf of Maine and impacts on Gulf of Maine cod and other depleted stocks without reestablishing trip limits. So the committee had some, the PDT and the committee had some discussion of this as a potential rationale for why this may be an Amendment 18, is that cod concentration tends to attract fishing effort in the inshore Gulf of Maine by all vessel sizes. And because with potential depletion, some vessels could lose their feasible fishing area, may go out of business, reducing fleet diversity. So you could think about measures that could prevent all vessels from fishing too hard inshore to protect that stock. Caution to not overlap or conflict with what's going on with the current habitat amendment and all the work that's there. The PDT provided the committee a brief discussion of the impacts, implications, and trade-offs to consider of some of the potential measures. So the committee had quite an extensive discussion and ended up passing the following two motions. One would establish a potential inshore-offshore Gulf of Maine boundary line, including the 70 degree west and 70 degree 15 minute west longitude lines extending north and south. And two, apply the following to the commercial and recreational groundfish fisheries: divide the existing Gulf of Maine ACLs into inshore and offshore sub-ACLs based on either historical catch patterns or stock distribution up to 20 years prior, and a sub-option to prohibit vessels from fishing in both inshore and offshore Gulf of Maine areas on a single trip without observer EM technology, which can account for where they're fishing. also to develop an expanded gear-restricted area in the inshore Gulf of Maine. The final two slides I have for you today, just with thanks to Michelle Bachman, pulled together for me a map that I overlaid these potential two lines for you. You see the statistical areas. The Gulf of Maine is, and Georges Bank are bounded by the 521, 522, or the Georges Bank stock area to the north and west of that is Gulf of Maine. You see the year-round closures and existing habitat closures. Also for you is a figure that has been pulled from out of the habitat amendment with these potential two boundaries overlaid, so you can see that. The area in aqua is the current trawl roller gear area, 12-inch maximum for all trawls fishing under the groundfish FNP. The habitat amendment may apply that area to all trawls, as well as change that area to that in pink hash on the slide. So with this motion, it'll still need to be worked out in terms of expanding that area. Do you mean to include other areas, changing the roller gear diameter or some other gear restriction? That still needs to be worked out. That concludes my slides.
Thank you, Rachel. Questions from the council for Rachel? Terry.
So, Rachel, I was looking at the goals and looking at all our motions. It seems like we've only addressed two of the goals. Are we going to continue to work on that with the inshore-offshore thing, the other two goals, enhance sector management and promote resilience and stability with fishing businesses? Is that... Because I've been looking through the document this morning, and I'm not finding anything that does that. So
the document is a little light on addressing some of the goals. The committee has been working for a year trying to address these goals, and this is where we're at. Some ideas have been discussed by the committee or the council, and decided to not include those. So. This is where you're at.
Terry.
They've been in and out, so we've addressed them, right? Is that what you're saying? If we had ideas and then we took them out, we've addressed them? Am I safe to assume that? Is that what that means?
Yeah, the document will discuss the ideas that were considered but rejected and the rationale for why those ideas were rejected.
Other questions from the council for Rachel? Mary Beth.
Thank you. I did have a question under Section 4.2, Trading U.S. Canada Tax, and I'm looking at the options here, and I'm just curious if there was any discussion about perhaps considering setting aside a portion of a tax, such as, you know, a stock of, like, haddock, and at the beginning of the year to allow an in-season trade, and then if it went unused to roll it back, perhaps, you know, to the fishery. A concept like that seems much simpler than the alternatives that are here. So my question is, was that ever discussed?
I don't recall that being discussed.
Terry.
Well, maybe this question is for Mitch. The divestiture part of this that you always talk about, well, you've spoken about several times. What do we need to do with this amendment to address that issue that you keep bringing up, that we need to make it clear what our intention is, whether we plan on forcing people to divest, or if we plan on grandfathering everybody? What is your interpretation of that?
I'm not sure I've addressed this before, but I think it should be clear what the and you need to be sure that the intent is clear, how you want to address whether people will be able to hold their allocation or not. As I recall, one of the alternatives explicitly says that allocation in excess of the limit will be held by the individual, yet during the year it's dispersed to the rest of the fishery. And I can't recall whether that's explicit in all the other as it applies to the other alternatives or not.
Terry.
So the motion that we'll have coming up that says that rule is going to apply to all of our caps, will that cover the divestiture part of it? If it passes, so.
I haven't seen that motion.
Why don't you hold that thought till we get to that motion. Other questions on Rachel's presentation? Any questions from the audience? Maggie.
Thank you. Rachel, on the options for the inshore-offshore that were developed at the last committee meeting, the motion about dividing the ACL, I'm assuming that's specific to Gulf of Maine Cod, but that language is not in the motion. And is that how you are interpreting that as well?
I assumed it was Gulf of Maine Cod, but I think it would be helpful to have some clarification today.
And as a follow-up, that same motion has a sub-option that would require monitoring to fish on, if you want to fish on both sides of the line, and I think we need clarification on whether or not that monitoring requirement, if approved, would also apply to the recreational fleet.
Other questions from the audience? Okay, seeing none, back to the council. Frank?
Okay, thank you. I'll move right into motions. First motion, to move section 4.3.2, alternative 2, option 1, hand gear A permit, PSC, and section to only be used by hand gear A fishermen except those leased to other gear types, and fishing year 12 and 13 to considered but rejected, and to revise option A to be consistent with the current hand gear A qualification criteria years. And that's in the document under 4.3 and starts on page 39. And that was committee motion passed 10-0-0.
Committee motion, which doesn't need a second, go out to the audience. Seeing no comments, back to the council. Seeing no comments, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. The motion carries, is unanimous, 15-0. Frank, you're on a roll.
To replace section 4.3.2, establish a fishery for hand gear A permits, alternative 2, option B, other fishery component. Sub-option B, calculation of discard rate, with sub-option A in table 5 of the June 2nd, 2014 Groundfish PDT memo, Groundfish Committee. And that was committee motion passed 10-0-0, and that was the rationale that Rachel had in the presentation.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Any comments from the council? Seeing none, those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. The motion carries unanimously, 15-0. Frank?
Move to strike the following language in section 4.1.2. Limit the holdings of PSC from alternative 2, 3, and 4 The council may select one or more multi-species stocks to which the alternative would apply. That was 10-0-0, and that's on page 31 of the document.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Comments from the audience? Seeing none, are any comments from the council? Tom.
Just for those, the benefit of those who weren't here, this language was included in across the range of cap alternatives, and this just cleans it up so that staff doesn't have to identify and analyze a huge volume of different iterations of caps on certain stocks but not others. So I think everybody felt like, you know, we had a decent range of alternatives, and that taking this language out would make the analysis a lot easier.
Thank you, Tom. Any further comments? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Unanimous again, 15-0. Frank.
Okay. To include an Amendment 18, a sub-auction. Okay. For all alternatives in Section 4.1.2, limit the holdings of PSE that an individual human person that have a PSE for a stock or stocks in excess of the identified cap would have the associated ACE annually distributed to the rest of the fleet in a manner described in Framework 45. The PSEs for the permit would remain unchanged. This passed the committee 9-0-1.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Are there any comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Mary Beth.
So just a question. I mean, I'm not on the Groundfish Committee. What's the value of doing it this way? I mean, if somebody has a higher percentage, that would change on an annual basis, so you want them to be able to retain it? Is that what this allows? I'm just so
he can buy it.
Frank shaking his head, yes. Are there any other comments on the motion on the board? Tom.
Just to that, this we actually discussed this as a council prior to our last Groundfish Committee, and we sort of got halfway there. All right, we're going to distribute out anything above the cap that isn't grandfathered. We're going to distribute those opportunities to, you know, throughout the fishery. And that's sort of fine, but I think the council discussion sort of implied or explicitly stated that, you know, that PSC would permanently be gone from the permit. And I think the conversation that we subsequently have and the rationale for this motion is PSCs should be attached to those permits. If we need to annually distribute the opportunities for someone over that cap, that makes sense. But when they sell that permit, the PSCs are what they were when they bought it. And I think it makes sense that to do it this way, and we'll get it analyzed. But that's sort of the origin of this.
Tom.
I'm not going to go into detail, but I think there's some issues here that we're going to have to sort out on this one with respect to how ACE is treated and how PSC is treated within sectors and with individuals. If you redistribute ACE to the fleet, it's redistributed within the same person's sector, and what measures do you have in place to make sure that ACE doesn't flow back to the same guy who just had it removed?
Any further comments? David.
I'm going to be consistent with the position I took a few years ago regarding the allocation formula for PSC. I opposed the allocation formula at the time. I preferred another option that was in the amendment. I did not prevail. But again, to be consistent, I'm going to vote against the motion since I'd like to see some other means, some other way of distributing that PSC to the fleet. Not necessarily the way it was initially distributed, but in some other way. But I'm not going to offer up any motion to amend because it will not go anywhere. But I will oppose the motion, again, to be consistent with the position I've taken in the past. And I still hold to it.
Gary.
So, question for Tom, I guess, about what he just said. What when we get a PSC, a certain amount of people don't renew their permits every year, and that PSC goes out to the rest of the fleet that's actually fishing, and it only goes to the people that are internally in their own sector? Is that what you said, Tom?
No, I don't think that's what I said.
Okay, so it's the whole sector of the fishery, the sector system, right?
Yeah, it gets redistributed throughout the sector system.
Okay, that's...
Any final comments, Vincent?
Kind of a question for Tom on your comment, what Terry was talking about. We're creating a cap for holdings, not so much leasing. So would that be a problem, that if that holding went back to that person to harvest?
Well, I mean, this is an alternative that's in an early stage of development. I think, you know, rather than debate these questions here, these are all questions the committee is going to have to work through.
Jim, I see your hand up. We've already gone by the public comment period. Is this important point to make?
I think so.
Okay. Come on up. You've got your one pass of the day.
My question is, you know, I understand what you're trying to do here, but why would you do this on a stock, for instance, of Georges Bank had it? So if somebody happened to have more than their share of whatever you determine is should be right, and we're catching 20% of the Georges Bank haddock, why would you do that to somebody? Why would you? How is that consistent with your goal of higher utilization of quotas? I mean, you've got redfish, you've got pollock, you've got many stocks that were only catching fractions, relatively low fractions of the overall ace, and now you're putting in a mechanism that it's going to make that exacerbate that and not reach your goal that you've stated in your amendment to increase utilization of quotas. So I'm just going to leave that out there. I think this is, you know, there may be a way to fix that, but I'm just putting it out there as a question, is it's not consistent with what you originally said your goal is, because this will for sure have an effect on those stocks of being less utilized. There's no impediment for some, there's no barriers from anybody utilizing more of those stocks as it is. So why would you put barriers in that when we want more of that to be caught? Thank you.
Back to the council. Matt? Mike?
Yeah, I'm really just trying to fully understand this. So basically, if you have more PSC than the cap, you can't use it. It gets redistributed. I'm trying to understand why anyone would hold on to that, why that permit wouldn't get sold. Is there any scenario where in the future they somehow get to use it? The cap restriction goes away or something like that?
Sure.
So I think, no, Mike, I think it's so people can balance. Okay, so somebody's pushing the cap, say 15%, but he only has 1% of the dabs. And he needs more dabs to be able to utilize the 15%, so it's a balancing thing. So.
Okay. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? Motion carries 14-1. Frank?
Okay, next. It's not a committee motion. So. To approve the range of alternatives in Amendment 18 with the exception of the measures to address concentration of effort in the inshore Gulf of Maine.
Second by Laura. Terry.
Is this the spot where we should have the divestiture discussion? And shouldn't that be in with the range of alternatives for that, or no, Terry?
Rachel, your advice, please.
So you don't have an alternative currently that if you're interested, if you put in a cap, X percent, and someone is over that X percent, you don't have an alternative that would grandfather that person in. That person, if this option that you just passed, you know, were to be final action, they would have to on an annual basis, divest of that, and it would get redistributed. If you're interested in something other than that, you know, that's the only option in the document right now.
Terry.
Yeah, so I just think that we need to clarify I have a motion, actually, if that would be better. That Joan, can you put up that divestiture motion? Would you entertain a motion, Terry? Oh.
So we have a motion on it, so are you going to want to... what's your pleasure? Do you want to amend it to add yours? Or vote this up or down, then add, then make... this is going to move forward this range of alternatives. You can add...
You can table this.
Or you can table this, and then... might be the cleanest way would be to table this and then put your motion up on the board for inclusion in this.
Okay, that's fine with me.
You're going to make the motion?
A motion to table this motion.
Seconded by Mary Beth. Okay, let's vote this. On the motion to table, please, those who support the motion to table, please indicate so. Unanimous 15-0. Terry, you're up.
I was going to approve.
Frank's motion is tabled. You want to add something?
Yeah, so Joan has a motion that I'd like to put up about divesting.
You want to read it?
That a person, holder, owner, whatever we're calling them today, will not be forced to divest with any of our accumulation caps.
Is there a second on this motion? Seconded by Laura. Okay. Mitch is going to ask a clarifying question, and then I'm going to go out to the audience.
Now, is this for the holders as of the control date?
Yeah, I would say. Because that's where we have the placeholder. So, yes.
So that should be added into the motion.
I'll take that as a friendly.
Okay, comments from the audience. Maggie. Joan, could you add as a control date in there?
Thank you. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine, speaking in support of the motion. The only question I have is with regards to the language that was just attached regarding the control date, and that basically makes it explicit that you intend to use the control date, and I'm just wondering if there could be a different option that says as of the date of implementation, because certainly some things have changed hands since the control date, and those individuals would likely prefer that this option would provide them with some assurity that they would not be forced to divest as well. It's been a while. We've been working on this for a while, and I'm sure that some things have changed hands since the control date. Thank you.
Other comments from the audience? Dick?
Dick Allen. I have a... Oops, am I in here? Sorry. I have a question about divestiture in this situation. I think you just adopted a motion that says that somebody buys a permit that puts them over the limit. The process then is that whatever they're over gets redistributed on an annual basis. Now, is that divestiture? Is that the kind of divestiture you're talking about? Or are you talking about making somebody sell holdings that they have that are over the accumulation limit? Because this doesn't seem to be applicable. If you're going to allow people to buy permits that put them over the limit, and the procedure for dealing with that is that the excess gets redistributed, I'm not sure why this is necessary. That the control date really becomes immaterial, it would seem to me. There's no real issue about somebody being over. If they want to be over but not get the annual use of it, that's basically what the previous motion covered. So I'm not sure I understand exactly what the issue is here.
I jumped the gun in not getting your rationale, Terry, before I went out to the audience. So if you could provide that, and then we'll go back to, I see, Vito and Jim.
Yeah, so I think the rationale for this is that we have caps that are lower than currently people own in the fishery now. We have options for caps that are, and basically it would allow those people to continue to own that portion of the, not own, hold that portion of the fishery that they have now. So that's what this motion does. It just lets people continue to hold on to the holdings that they have.
And they would not be subject to the annual redistribution? Is that the intent?
Yeah, I mean, they'd actually have the holdings. So,
and they could use it?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
That clarifies it.
So everyone clear what the intent of the motion is? Tom?
I think I am, based on the response here, but I want to make sure I understand it. So if this were to pass for all the measures and these eventually get implemented, this means that whether ACE is redistributed or not would be based on the ownership and the amounts of PSC that people had as of the date, the control date. So I'm struggling a little bit to know how that affects somebody who owns something as of the control date but now owns something different 3 years later. So, and I think this was Maggie's question about why isn't it the implementation date, whether the control date. So there's really two questions in there. One is, so what we're talking about is if you owned more than the cap as of the control date and you still owe that now, we won't redistribute the ACE associated with a cap. Is that what that means? Okay, that's what that means. But then the next question is, if you it talks about the control date. If you owned more than the cap on the control date or less than the cap on the control date, but now you no longer own that, are you still bound by that? I mean, I'm a little confused.
Can you provide some more clarity, Terry?
I'll do my best. So my intention is that, so we set the cap at, let's just take the highest cap that we have, highest share of a stock that we have at 23%. Let's say we set it there. Anybody who has less than 23% of any stock wouldn't have to divest that particular stock. That's my intention of this. And whether we set the number at any of our option at 15.5 or wherever that number is, then that is the number. But if you own more than that before the control date, then you wouldn't have to divest that portion. Does that clarify it?
Can I maybe provide an example to see if I understand what you're talking about?
Yes, you can. Oh, sorry.
So...
Laura said it was okay.
Oh. Thank you, Laura. So if say, the accumulation limit is 20, and someone at the control date had 22, if this were to pass, that person could continue to have their 22 and use that from now into the future. But someone else who had 18 as of the control date, they acquired a permit in the future that brought them up to 22. We still have this accumulation limit at 20. That second person would have to divest on an annual basis that two PSC, whereas the first person would not, because they had their holdings as of the control date above that. Is that what you're getting at?
So, Terry, this is a grandfathering provision you're putting in?
I guess so. But I think maybe Rachel's using the wrong word on that, or my interpretation of the word. Divesting the extra quota every year. I just call it a redistribution of the quota, not a divestiture. Because a divestiture is, you actually have to sell it, right, to divest something? Do I have that term right? So, I mean, you wouldn't have to sell it. The quota would be redistributed, anything over 20. So if the number comes out to be 20.
So without splitting hairs, they're not divesting. They're just reassigning. So, I'm clear. Vito, Jim, and
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Generally, we support the concept, but this is bringing up more questions now. At the committee meeting, it was talk about divestiture, and one of the conversations came up about forced divestiture, meaning the taking of the permit. In other words, everybody over this cap, turn them in. They get redistributed based on Framework 45. You don't own it anymore. And, geez, we thought, never thought of that. So we had asked, could there be clarification at the council level that isn't a potential outcome, that something would just be taken, that, you know, there would be a controlled divestiture where someone would be asked, you know, you got so much time to sell the permit at market value. So this now seems more like the way it's worded seems like a grandfather clause, and which is a separate thing. I thought that was in the document already. Is there grandfathering's not in the document? Okay, so we definitely need something like this. But it doesn't get to the problem of if there is a cap and that cap is imposed, what is what's the council's intent to let, if this goes out to public hearing, people are going to need to know what this means. If you pick 5%, if you pick 15%, what does that mean with my excess? Do I have to start selling it now before the, not me, but, a guy that's got that kind of quota, does he have to start selling that before the ink is dry in the amendment and panic because it's going to get taken from him? I mean, these are important. I don't know if everyone realizes the amount of money that people have leveraged in this fishery to try to survive it, and now these discussions are pretty scary. At a minimum, they need to know, will the amendment contemplate there's going to be a cap and you're going to be provided ample time to make a decision and make a move and get under that cap. This being able to own it but not use it thing, to me, is I don't understand that one. I think one of the council members mentioned that. That's basically as bad as taking it almost. I do realize you might be able to have some other stocks that you can hang on to, but so please, if you could address that issue for the public before this, if you're going to take this off the table again and vote up what you got for an amendment. You got a bunch of caps, and no one knows what the implications of the caps are in general. That's what we're thinking of as forced divestiture, is we're taking the permit. On the day that the ink is dry on that amendment, it's game over. You no longer own above that. That's what we want. We didn't think the council wanted that, and it would be great if the council could make that clear up front that would not be the case that there would be some, and I think you'd have to have it in the amendment. What is the plan if someone has to divest permits? How much time are they going to have to do it? You know, this talk now about the redistribution not being Framework 45. That, to me, that's an amendment all by itself. If you don't go down the Framework 45 level, that's got to be right up front and discussed, not at the last meeting, that suddenly there's going to be a totally different distribution of the permits that are getting coughed up by people. So I'm kind of feeling like we got a ways to go on this issue, unless you can come up with a motion that can relieve that problem.
Jim?
Yeah, I appreciate what Terry and Laura are trying to do here on a grandfather thing. But again, as Vito mentioned, there's a lot of questions here. One is if somebody was at the cap on the control date, but through no fault of their own, meaning they didn't purchase one more permit, today they're over the cap because since then, since the control date to now or whenever this becomes in force, there's probably been a few permits drop out of the fisheries and your percentages change. Our percentages change every year incrementally, but over time it can add up to something. So somebody may be 0.2% over the cap when they weren't on the control date, right? So what happens to that? What happens to somebody that did nothing but live by the control date and now they're over the cap? I just, you know, that's a question that will probably need to be answered. Are they forced to sell a permit, or are you going to take that away? So there's another question that is, and I've always had that one. I've mentioned it before that when you set these caps, it's got to be pretty careful because, you know, things can happen in the fisheries that nobody can control or an owner can control, and they're all of a sudden over a cap, and there's no way out for them. So I think there's, again, more questions. Thank you.
Gene?
Yeah.
Before you go, Jim?
I think I'm understanding what you're asking, but I could be not. Alternative, what any boat that you owned as of the control date is automatically, and the rights to that you get to keep. That none of that is going to be reduced as of the control date. Doesn't matter what the cap is or what percentage it is. That's how I would interpret this grant. That's how we did it in scallops. So it's based on the boats or permits that you own and control at the time of the control date. You get to keep those regardless of how the relative percentage that might represent goes up and down since the control date. I mean, that's my interpretation. I don't know if Terry agrees with that, but that's how I would interpret this.
Thank you. That clears up something that's been bothering me. Thank you.
Aaron.
Aaron Doherty with Penobscot East Resource Center. I'm really glad to see that the council is wrestling with some of these difficult and thorny issues and moving forward substantially on the topic of capping accumulation. I haven't heard talk yet about what happens with the second generation, and I think that's a logical extension of the grandfathering consideration. So I just pose that to the council in terms of if you're grandfathered in as a first-generation quota holder, and then you sell your permits, you sell your business to someone else, does that second generation, are they also grandfathered? Do you have to split that up and sell to multiple individuals so that that second generation then complies with the caps? I think that's something that should be discussed, and I'd love to hear how that's resolved. Thanks.
Are there any other comments from the audience on the motion on the board? Joey.
Joe Nickerson, fishing vessel Haley Ann. I'd like to see this divesting be in the document for analysis, and I would like to see the control gate used for the accumulation cap.
Thank you, Joe. Is there anybody else in the audience? Seeing none, we're going to go back. We have quite a few hands up. I saw Mike Sisson's first.
Yeah, I do think we need to clarify what this really says. First, what I've heard is that people really don't mean divestiture in the sense of telling somebody to sell it or not. They really mean that a person will be allowed to use their holdings that they had as of the control date. So I think if that's the intent, that ought to be made clear. Now, what's still unclear to me is how that grandfathering relates to accumulation caps, whether it be 5% or 20%, that are actually going to be in the amendment. And one way to interpret it would be that if, as a result of holdings that you have right now, they would put you over the cap, these are permits you owned at the time of the control date, you'd still be allowed to use all of your holdings. But if the holdings you have right now gave you less than the cap, obviously you could still use them, but you could actually increase your holdings, buy more permits to get up to that cap. But if somehow over time things change and you ended up above the cap from holdings you purchased after the control date, you can't use them. I think that's my understanding of what's being proposed here. I don't think this says it. I think it would take I think it could be wordsmith to say it, but I don't think it's clear from what's written there.
Mark Alexander.
Thank you. I'm perplexed about this too, really understanding what it means. And on the one hand, we said that the motion that we voted on before does not require or presume divestiture, only redistribution for a given year. But there's many places in the document where it says this alternative may force divestiture or this alternative may not. So I'm curious about, it seems like something like this is needed, not only in this form, but an alternative that would say that they will be forced to. So we actually consider both the positive and negative aspects of this. So.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I had, as I understood this originally, it was a grandfathering provision, and so I did want to understand what would happen in the event of a subsequent transaction or change in ownership. And if the intent is to grandfather in people as of the date of the control date, then and that were an exemption to the ownership cap, that upon a transaction or subsequent sale of the underlying permit, that they would have to operate under whatever caps are approved and wouldn't be grandfathered anymore. But I would think that the document ought to be clear about what happens in the event of a subsequent ownership change or transaction.
John Bullard.
Yeah, I see this as a grandfather clause, and being a grandfather, I'm partial to grandfathers. And see Peter Shelley out there, expect him to be supportive too. And I think the way I interpret this is if you were to take alternative four, say, Gulf of Maine cod, 15%, if someone's at 13% on the control date, it means they're subject to that 15% cap. If they're at 18% on the control date, it means for that stock only, Gulf of Maine cod, their cap and only their cap is 18%. And I think Rick and Aaron Doherty raised an issue, and is that for the life of the permit, or is that for the life of the ownership of that permit by that single individual? And I think this council ought to wrestle with that issue. It's a separate issue, and ought to give instruction about that, either as a follow-on motion or not, because that's important in the value of this permit. It's a very simple issue. Does this apply for the first owner or all owners? And so we ought to think about that. But I think especially for sending this out for comment, we ought to do this. And one other reason that hasn't been mentioned that I think, and one additional reason that I'm supportive of this, is I think as you look at these options, and if someone's thinking about do I support option 4 or do I support option 5, you know, someone might be thinking about, well, you know, I don't want someone to have to divest, and so because I'm not sure if someone's going to have to divest, I think I better go with option 5 because it sets every limit very high. But if we have a grandfather clause, then you can say, all right, well, I'll go with option 3 or I'll go with option 4 because I know there's a grandfather clause in there, and I can set low limits because I know that there's a provision in here that means no one has to divest. So I can be comfortable setting low accumulation limits because I know no one's going to have to divest. And so I think that that allows us to set low limits because we know no one's going to have to divest. And so I think that's a very smart motion.
Okay, I've got Tom Dempsey, Mary Beth, and Dave Pierce.
Yeah, I think it's problematic to have a motion that we're already talking about something sort of different. So the motion says divest, but what we're all talking about now is grandfathering. So I think we should have a motion that is specific to grandfathering, because I think that's where we've ended up, and that's what we're actually trying to talk about and talk to. So I have that motion. I sent that language to Joan. It'd be a motion to substitute. And I think it addresses both two issues, not all the issues, and certainly not the one that Rick addressed. I'm not sure I have the language in my head right that would address that subsequent issue, but this motion to substitute would be to include in Amendment 18 an option for each cap alternative that would grandfather holdings in excess of that cap. Additionally, to clarify that in the event that someone is required to sell permits as a result of this action, adequate time will be provided to accommodate that transfer. Two issues, basically the grandfathering is an option for each cap alternative.
Let's get a second first. Is there a second to the motion? Second by Terry.
The second is to show that, demonstrate that signal from the council that we're not, you know, anybody over this cap is going to have the opportunity to sell that, and we'll make that, and we'll accommodate that transfer. We're not going to be pulling permits without any compensation. We're not going to force somebody to sell overnight.
Mary Beth.
I guess I supported the original motion. I think this clarifying motion to substitute is fine. I do wonder, though, the further we get into this, different issues arise, and I'm not sure that we can flesh that all out here. I mean, what happens when somebody sells a permit? You know, that is a really big issue. Certainly there are examples in other, you know, programs around the country in how this would work, and it is not simple at all. I don't feel comfortable adding something like that onto this motion at this time. And, you know, and the other thing I'm not, you know, don't think that people have contemplated is what happens in a buyout. It could put a whole bunch of people over the cap. I mean, I don't know if the committee's talked about that. And I just wonder if perhaps this issue shouldn't go back to the committee. I mean, I know that we're supposed to be approving a range of alternatives, but I don't think we could really contemplate all of the different issues that have come up in public testimony here and thoughts that I've had, you know, this afternoon on this particular issue. But I do think the motion on the board to substitute is fine, and I would support it.
David?
Yeah, I sense that everything is coming undone. I can't support the motion to substitute. I cannot support the motion made by Terry for this reason. Alternative 2 is the only alternative that has a control date, recognizing that individuals may have accumulated a lot of PSC, and we don't want to penalize them for all of that accumulation prior to the control date. The reason why the control date is specific to Alternative 2 is that the PSC accumulation limits are low. Frankly, not low enough. I'm swallowing hard on this amendment regarding all the alternatives because I look at the PSC accumulation limits for some of the stocks in Table 2. I think they're too high. But I battled that before and I lost the battle, so I'm not going there again. But I'm willing to accept that, Table 2, as an option for the grandfathering provision, that is through the control date. And it says here that, so that was the logic for the control date attached to Alternative 2. The other alternatives don't have a control date, and the reason for that is the PSC accumulation limits go way up, very high, frankly. Alternative 2, you know, Alternative 3, where is it here? I can see the table. Well, anyways, they go up high. So they're up high, 15, 20%, 30%. Therefore, when we talk about excessive shares, we're getting to the point where, in this particular table, this particular alternative, we're at the excessive point. So there's no control date. And we acknowledge that in Alternative 4, for example, that this likely will not force divestiture of current holdings except for Southern New England, Mid-Atlantic winter flounder. So we've addressed the divestiture issue in that particular alternative by saying only one stock, according to the analysis we've done, the holdings would likely have to be reallocated. All right? And then we go to Alternative 5, same thing, except the percentages get even higher for some of the stocks, and it says that for Georges Bank, Winter Flounder, high enough so it will not force divestiture of current holdings, et cetera, et cetera, and it goes on from there. So every particular alternative has much higher amounts of PSC that can be accumulated. There is no control date. Therefore, there will be divestiture in the interest of there not being excessive shares as defined by the alternatives. So this muddies the waters in a major way because it says that there really is no control date, right? As of today, as of tomorrow, as of when this document is eventually adopted, whatever you've got in excess of the cap, it's yours. Frankly, that's going to lead to excessive shares. That could lead to somebody having 80% of a particular PSC. This, to me, upends the entire amendment. It undoes the work that we have done that has gotten us to this point relative to each specific option, each specific alternative, and the rationale that describes why we have offered up these alternatives. I feel like I'm at square one with this particular amendment and are dealing with excessive shares.
Other comments on the motion to substitute? Gene?
Clarification. This doesn't mention the control date. Is that intentional?
Tom?
Yeah, and that was going to be my comment to Dr. Pierce. This doesn't address the timing, doesn't change in any way the existing alternatives that we discussed at the committee level. All this creates is a sub-option under each of those alternatives that would grandfather people in excess of that cap. So if the control date was part of the alternative, it still is. This motion does not address that. So this simply says grandfather holdings within that alternative.
So regardless of whether they were purchased yesterday or before the control date?
The timeline that's identified, I think, in each management option we have currently in the document either identifies the control date or the date of implementation. So my intent is that this motion doesn't change that for any of the alternatives.
Further comments on the motion to substitute? Rachel.
Just to clarify, that none of the option alternatives have the control date currently. Alternative 2 says that the numbers that Alternative 2 are based on took the highest holdings as of the control date, and that's what those numbers are. So currently, none of the alternatives have anything about the control date in them other than why Alternative 2 numbers are the way they are.
So this means that...
I believe I support the motion, but I think I have a question for Gene, where people were mentioning that this is for the holding somebody has today. So if after this meeting I walk out that door and have a heart attack and my son can't take over my business, we're doing what would to fishermen families, what you're doing to farmers. They can't afford the inherent taxes to keep moving forward. You know, or if an individual happens to get in a mess and has a divorce from his wife and she gets something, then, you know, I don't, how do those things work legally, Gene? You know, I mean, we're all getting older in this fleet. We have people that are generational, you know, legacies we're trying to keep going. And it seems to me we're just doing nothing but trying to take that apart. So my question is, what happens in those cases?
Well, I mean, I don't think that's, you know, I mean, if you die tomorrow, I mean, your estate owns it, and I think you would be covered. Well, I'm uncertain what this substitute motion means, because it doesn't mention the control date, and apparently there's no control date that it would be tied to, so it would mean, this is just going back to my original comment first, that whatever you own today, or you go out and buy in the next 2 weeks, you're going to be able to keep. Is that? I guess that's your intent, right?
Tom?
My intent wasn't to change the nature of the alternatives that are already in the document. So this would just grandfather holdings. I mean,
as of what date, though? That's what I'm asking.
I mean, we're setting caps. So are those caps tied to a date? The only, what we heard from Rachel is that the only one is they're derived from a date, but they're not identified.
No, but
it would be the date of implementation of the
action. So date of implementation. So this motion doesn't change what the document currently has, which is apparently the date of implementation.
Right.
So I haven't included the control date explicitly, but not including that hasn't changed anything in the document.
Well, not knowing the document as well as others, it seems like you could go between now and the implementation, you can go out and buy as many permits as you want, and you're going to be grandfathered in. The control date will no longer serve any purpose. It will create an incentive to go out and purchase as many permits as you can as of today. That's what this motion seems like to me it will do, which doesn't make any sense. The whole purpose of the control date was if you buy permits after the control date, you're subject, you know, you're at risk, you're on notice that you might not be able to keep those. And I think that's a dangerous thing to do here, or at least not to make clear. But, I mean, that doesn't, I'm still not answering Jim's question. But
sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Tom.
I now understand, I think I understand better. I'm perfectly happy adding the language as of the control date. That's not a problem for me because this is adding an option to the document. So I could, you know, perfect that language that say, yep, right there, as of the control date. I get that now. I appreciate that. I think that's an improvement. But this is an option. And I think one of the things that, because of some of the discussions, the issue that Rick and Jim and Aaron have brought up, let's make sure that we're working on this at the committee. I don't think this, you know, there are more questions than answers once you dig into how this is actually going to work. So I'm not comfortable putting this out. I think we should vote this motion up. I think this needs to get done, but I also think we need to keep working on these issues at the Groundfish Committee.
Gene.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tom basically said it. I think those kinds of questions should be brought up and discussed. I think, you know, we did this with scallops. We grandfathered in scallops. I think some of these issues questions were asked and answered at that time, but it's been so long, I'm not sure. And we can go back and see if some of those questions were answered.
May I respond to
Jim, and then we're going to move this
along. Because I think
in
scallops you picked a cap that was above anybody's holdings, so it didn't have the relevance of this, if I remember.
It was 5%. I think there were a couple that might have been above. I'm not sure. Again, we can check that. I know you're speculating about it. So nobody was above it.
Okay, Terry, I'm assuming you're okay with the modified language?
Yes.
Okay, John Bullard, then Mike Siswine.
I
want to address both Tom's alternative, which I support, but also the point that Dr. Pierce made, and that is that the current fleet has tremendous diversity, and that's what we're trying to address and I think either maintain or enhance. And accumulation, while it's a noun, is really trying to address a verb. That is, we're trying to prevent accumulation. That's what we're trying to cap. And if you look at these numbers, one way to look at it is, you know, 15 or 20%. And the reason I think that the grandfather clause is so important is, you know, at first blush, you might say 15 or 20% is a low number. But theoretically, that means if it played out, you have a fleet of 5 to 7 people. I don't think that's the vision of what we're trying to create in Amendment 18 of diversity, a fleet of 5 to 7 people, which is if everyone has 15 to 20%. And so, but if you set caps at 5% or so on, you're making everyone divest. 5%, I think, is what scallops are. So that's why the grandfather clause is so important, is that the current fleet has this incredible range of holdings. That's a good thing, having that range. And so the grandfather clause is really essential to maintaining that. You don't want people at the high end divesting, but there are a lot of people at the very low end. So you don't want accumulation, the verb. And so I think with the grandfather clause, you may be more likely to allow an alternative when we get to it to have low limits, which I think we need if we're going to have preserved diversity. If you set limits on average at 30%, what we're saying is theoretically you have a vision of 4 people owning the fleet. I don't think that's what our vision is.
Mike.
Yeah, I certainly agree with the idea that we had a control date and we don't want to damage anybody who acted in good faith, who had holdings at the time of the control date and is behaving in good faith. I still think this is unclear as to what's intended and overly complicated. But if in fact what we're saying is we have Amendment 18 and it's going to have caps in it, and they will apply except that if you held whatever holdings you had as of the control date that might have exceeded that cap, you can use. Is that what the intent of this is? Because if that is, that's straightforward. I think we could say it easier, but I can support it. But if it's simply that, Amendment 18 will have alternatives about caps. In the end of the day, we're going to select from them, but we're going to allow an exception that if you held more than that cap at the time of the control date, you'll be allowed to use it. And if that's it, then I can vote for it, and let's move on. You could also make a motion that would say it in about one line, but so be it.
We've pretty well beat this to death. Does anybody have a need to make a final further comment? Okay, seeing none, those who support the motion to substitute, please indicate so. Those opposed? The motion to substitute carries 14-1. Comes the main motion, same sign on the main motion as substituted. Those support it. And those opposed. Main motion as substituted carries 14-1. Mary Beth.
So process question here. The committee motion has been tabled. Should I make a motion to untable the motion?
No, I think Doug has a motion to first. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I have is a housekeeping motion. And I actually told the PDG chair that I would do this to help reduce her workload a little bit. We, under Section 4.3.2, the hand gear A alternative, under Option B, we recently just approved substituting a recommendation by the PDT to revise sub-option B that essentially says we're going to calculate the discard rate for the hand gear A, sub-ACL, and the other discards of the other species that are going to be classified under the subcomponents using the long line and hook gear. Because of that, you really don't need to have subs option A because you already have this included in here. If you look at, to make it easier, if you look at slide number 13, sub option A says account for the catch of other stocks in the other subcomponent, sub-ACL. There's no clarification of how they're going to calculate it. We've already included that concept with a specific direction on how it's going to be calculated in sub-option B. So we don't need sub-option A, and if Rachel would like to clarify that or confirm that, I'd be glad to hear from her. But this is my motion, is to essentially remove sub-option A from this category, if there's a second to it.
Second by Terry Alexander. Rachel, you concur with Doug?
Yep, that's what the PDT recommended.
Any comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Those opposed? Those abstaining? Those who are on the computer not paying attention? Okay, it's unanimous, 15-0. Okay, are there any other motions before we consider whether or not to untable the underlying motion? Okay, seeing none, Mitch has a clarifying question.
Yeah, concerning the alternative 2 under 4.4 for data confidentiality, I just wanted to remind folks that when this was voted up in the committee, I noted that the council cannot determine necessarily what is confidential or not confidential. The Magnuson Act has parameters for determining when data that is submitted to the agency is confidential. And the Magnuson Act language is information that is required to be submitted shall remain confidential unless it is used for a determination under a limited access program. So when that alternative is being developed and analyzed, it may be that some of the information may be releasable under certain conditions, but that needs to be kept in mind, that it needs to be subject to those Magnuson Act confidentiality requirements.
Thank you. Tom?
If I might ask a follow-up question of counsel. I guess, are you suggesting that whether we pick, should we pick alternative two, it really does nothing because the Magnuson Act provisions would override whatever we decide for this one? I mean, it may turn out to be consistent with Magnuson, but ultimately it's the Magnuson Act data confidentiality provisions that determine what can be released and not what we write in our document.
Correct. I'm saying in some ways I'm saying it depends. It depends on how the language is developed and what specific information you want to have released. For example, it may be that specific individual specific individuals will not be able to be identified, maybe not even the specific date, whatever would maintain that confidentiality. You may be able to aggregate certain data and get the same result that you're seeking, and that is information of leasing data distributed to the industry. So it depends on how the information is released. So in a way, yes, it depends on you could create specific language and say that it must be released at the individual by date and all of the particular information, and then the Magnuson Act would trump that if it's not used for a determination. Is that clear?
Clear as mud. I was just trying to figure out whether this is actually a useful alternative or not.
Rachel?
Well, I was just thinking and wondering if it would be better for the council to write a letter to the agency that says, you know, if you're interested in making this information available, you know, please make leasing data available to the extent that the MSA allows, aggregated or not releasing individual names or how be it, rather than putting this as an alternative in the action.
Could I?
James. Mitch.
Thank you. And it would be helpful probably to include the purpose for the information, because that might help the agency when they're determining how to release it or how to package it to determine how helpful it would be.
Okay, we're at the point where we have a tabled motion. Mary Beth?
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I make a motion to untable the committee motion.
Seconded by Laura. Those support the motion on the board made and seconded to untable the motion. It's unanimous 15-0. Mary Beth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a motion to substitute that Joan has, and I'll read the motion. Send Amendment 18 back to the committee to consider impacts of PSC caps and divestiture, I can't even say it, on underutilized species, future buybacks, and subsequent sale of permits, and any other issues that may be raised on this section of the document.
Seconded by Dave Preble. No.
Thirded
by Laura. Rationale, then go out to the audience.
Thank you. I just think the discussion we've had really highlights that there needs to be more thought about this particular section and what the consequences of what it could be in the future, both to second generations and buybacks. There's just a whole bunch of things and subsequent sales. That's very complicated. I don't think we're going to be able to resolve these issues on the fly here today, and I think it would be more appropriately addressed by the committee.
Dave?
I agree completely with what Mary Beth said. There are complexities here that keep emerging that don't belong in a document which is out for analysis. This is stuff that the committee is supposed to be doing, and it needs to be done, and it needs to be done by the committee.
Comments from the audience? Brett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brett Tolley with the Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance. This motion is fine. I really have a question about process. I'm not sure if this motion, the intent is to send this entire conversation around Amendment 18 back to the committee, so I just want to have clarification. There was another motion that was passed at the committee level. It's included in the Amendment 18 document related to an inshore-offshore area and other provisions. This motion had passed at the committee level, is my understanding. So just a question about process. It seems like we've jumped from beyond the motions that passed at the committee, and now it looks like there may be a closing of the Amendment 18 discussion. So just a question of whether still get to the motions that passed at the committee. Thank you.
We haven't got there yet, Brett. Once we move this motion up or down, we're going to take a break and then continue the inshore offshore discussion.
Thank you.
Maggie.
Thank you, Terry. Maggie Raymond speaking in favor of the motion. It's clear that there are a lot of issues that need to be resolved around the points within the motion. I also wanted to say that I've heard, again, a couple of people on the council say that accumulation caps can address fleet diversity, and I don't see that explained in this, how that would work in this document at all. And in fact, our independent experts from Compass Lexicon, you know, suggested that that was not an appropriate tool to address fleet diversity. The comments that I heard today seem to be about making sure that some small players in the fishery remained in the fishery, but accumulation caps could potentially take out some of the what people would consider today to be the bigger players in the fishery, because you would make them unviable. So diversity goes both ways. I mean, diversity really needs to be, you know, maintaining the fleet of all sizes. So, again, I don't understand how caps accomplish that. It really isn't explained well in the document. If you can argue that and show me how that accumulation caps address fleet diversity, then maybe we're done with that issue and maybe we can just move on and get this amendment out the door. But I don't see how that works. So again, just speaking in favor of this motion. And I do think that your advisory panel can probably provide you with some good advice on how to make this this particular motion work out. Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the audience? You've always spoken with Brett. Aaron.
So I just want to start with Aaron Doherty, Penobscot East Resource Center. I just wanted to start with a question. It talks about divestiture in here, but I think just a few minutes ago we acknowledged that this council doesn't want to proceed with divestiture, so I'm just confused about if the council is going to be tasked with something that is really happening or not, because I thought if you're going to establish a grandfathering clause, then you're bypassing the whole problem of divestiture. So I'm just wondering what this is going to do. Secondly, I just want to encourage this council to stay the course. You've spent a lot of time, a lot of meetings working on Amendment 18 for several years now. We're a couple of years out past the control date, past the scoping hearings and all of that. So definitely continue to wrestle with these difficult, thorny issues. But, you know, don't get bogged down. At the end of the day, you're doing something that's very significant. It's needed in the industry today. I think a lot of other regions have acknowledged that caps are meaningful as far as protecting fleet diversity. So forge ahead. Thanks.
Anybody else in the audience? Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. We support the motion and going off to the committee for those very important details to get fleshed out. Just a comment, a couple of the goals and objectives that, two of them that really haven't been well addressed yet by the amendment. One of them being if there's any way a charge could be given to the committee when they consider these, promote resilience and stability of fishing businesses by encouraging diversification, quota utilization, and capital investment in the fishery. It's one of the four stated goals. So if there's any way when they're hammering out the details of these, if those that could be considered at least at that point, if not up front in the measures, at least in the consideration of developing the details, if the goals and objectives could be kept in mind, would be greatly appreciated.
Before I go back to Brett, is there anybody else in the audience? Brett, you get your second bite.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brett Tolley, Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance. I just wanted to follow up on this question around goals. We were just talking about looking at the accumulation caps and measuring them to our goals. Yeah, one of the goals is fleet diversity and also encouraging stability. The fourth goal of this amendment is to prevent any individual, corporation, or other entity from acquiring or controlling excessive shares of the fishery access privileges. Clearly, caps goes directly to this goal. And, you know, it's, I think that the conversation has to be directed to that goal, that setting caps relates to preventing excessive shares. When we look at the Compass Lexicon report, it was incredibly narrowly defined around market control, which is different than excessive shares. So I just encourage that as council members continue to wrestle with establishing accumulation limits, that it be measured against that goal number four. Thank you.
Back to the council. Tom?
I guess I got a question on interpretation of this motion. And so I look to the maker of the motion here, and I think I understand what it's trying to do. Some of the items that are in this motion are things that would come out when the alternatives would be analyzed, I think. And so I just want to get some sense from the council and the maker of the motion whether, should this motion pass, the idea is that we're going to address some of the details that haven't been addressed yet, such as, you know, make it clear what happens if a permit gets sold, address the issues that have been raised perhaps with transferring a permit to a child or whatever, those kind of details. But I'm hoping that we're not talking about sending this back to the committee to revisit all the other cap alternatives. I mean, is that a correct interpretation, that we're just trying to flesh out the details on how these cap alternatives will work? We're not going back. We don't want the committee to go back and suddenly come in and say, oh, we want all new ranges of caps and different structures of the caps, right?
I see a lot of shaking heads. Is that your intent, Mary Beth?
Well, I used the language here, consider impacts purposely and not develop alternatives, not necessarily to limit the development of some alternatives if you had to, but I didn't want it to be too prescriptive either. I mean, you know, the committee could create an alternative for underutilized species if they thought it was necessary or not, and I didn't want it, you know, to be prescriptive. So I'm not sure if it really addresses your concern, Tom. I didn't envision that the committee, having spent so much time creating the current cap alternatives in the document, they would be taking them out. I thought they were just going to be considering some of these issues that have arisen today in some fashion and doing what, you know, and dealing with that in the way that the committee feels is most appropriate.
I guess what I'm concerned about, reality, is staff time and the length of time on this amendment. You know, some of these things are things that are going to come out in analysis. I would hate for the PDT to spend a lot of time trying to analyze these impacts and then all of a sudden to have the alternatives dramatically change on them as a result of that analysis before we even go out to public hearing. So I think, you know, everybody's head was bobbing up and down. Those are things that never show up on the record, so that's why I'm saying it. But it sounds like everybody is kind of in agreement that the purpose of this motion is to try and flesh out the details that need to be fleshed out, but not for the committee not to necessarily go back to square one and suddenly rewrite all the alternatives.
Is that the will of the council? I've got John, Mark, and David.
I'm going to vote against this motion because I think the purpose of this motion is delay. And I think this is an open-ended motion because the intention is to spend a lot of time because it's a way to oppose Amendment 18. I'm sorry, but that's what I think it is. I think, as Tom said, there are issues that have been discussed here that we're going to find out and discuss in the public comment, and we'll hear that. And, you know, I've heard for 2 years kind of one camp saying how important Amendment 18 is, let's get on with it. And I've heard another camp say, we don't need Amendment 18, it's not important. And that's been part of this discussion. People saying Amendment 18 should be low priority, don't do it. And I think that's been a debate that's going on. People who support it, people who don't support it. And I think we should move it along. And I think this is a motion that is really in opposition to Amendment 18. I really think that's what it is. And yes, it's complicated. Yes, it's complex. Yes, it's connected to the buyout. All of those things. Those are all reasons to take more time, to stall, to delay. And, you know, while that happens, you know, while it happens, Amendment 18 does not happen. So, yes, there are questions. These will all come out in public comment. That's why you send it out there. So, you know, I'm just going to say my vote, at any rate, is no to the motion.
Mark Hibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the motion. In fact, I'm relieved that it was made and seconded. I was becoming alarmed at the accumulation rate of the questions versus the accumulation rate of the answers and insights. So I don't know if that's the right shopping list, but I certainly endorse having it go back to the committee under the restriction that the executive director, I think, you know, elicited positive support from us on. There are some things that I think the committee can get traction on and deal with that we don't have to hope will come out in public comment and in further discussion down the road. Thank you.
David Pierce.
Yeah, I'm strongly opposed to this motion. I agree with John. This is a motion to delay and defeat Amendment 18. It's as simple as that. We've heard a lot of opposition to Amendment 18 over the months. Leading up to Amendment 18, maybe the years leading up to Amendment 18, and this motion basically manifests that opposition and translates it into delay and defeat. And frankly, I think it takes advantage of John Bullard's initiatives, you know, working with the states and with the industry to take some of this disaster money, this federal disaster money, and to develop some sort of a buyout buyback scheme. John has been up front and has been pushing a movement in that direction, and we have agreed that it should be done. But it's going to take a while. This motion says future buybacks, all right? Considering future buybacks, what does that mean in terms of time? I suggest it means 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. How in the world can we anticipate future buybacks and all the different options that will be before us relative to buybacks or buyouts and then somehow mold that into Amendment 18 thinking, rationale, and analysis? I don't think it can be done. Subsequently, sales of permits. Again, this motion is an open door for delay and defeat of Amendment 18, and frankly, because the inshore-offshore issue is part of Amendment 18, it delays any consideration of that critical issue, as far as I'm concerned, until way in the future. This doesn't mean one committee meeting or two committee meetings. It means a year plus of time to devote to this initiative. I thought we were here to take action on the alternatives that are before us, and there has been some good discussion and need for some clarifications, and we've done that. But this just does it in, and I think does a great disservice to the council. If we pass it, we do a disservice to ourselves, and we do a disservice to those who came to all the scoping meetings and expressed concern about excessive shares, the need to deal with consolidation. We're not going to deal with it until way into the future if this motion passes, in my opinion.
Laura.
I just want to speak in response to the last two speakers as a seconder to this motion.
it was not at all my intent to delay. I'm pretty straightforward. I think people have seen that in the 3 years. So if I'm not going to support something, you know I'm not going to support it. Just speaking as a processor, we need the small boats and the big boats. And from the minute cat shares came into place, I was very concerned that we were going to end up with a factory trawler fishery with two processors basically controlling the entire fish supply, which is basically what's happened in the West Coast. And I am very strongly in support of continuing having a multi-sized fleet out there with longer trip vessels as well as short day boat vessels. So I really take offense at the idea that I would second a motion to delay and hurt the fleet, because that is not at all my intention. I am, however, tremendously concerned about unintended consequences to people's businesses. And so when the questions kept coming up about what if, those are real concerns for big boats and little boats and owners, PSC holders, and I think they're worthy of committee work to do it right and not end up with unintended consequences that could be very hurtful to all different sizes within the fleet. So I seconded the motion because I think it's worthy of consideration and not for some underhanded delay of Amendment 18. Thank you.
Terry.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Laura. I mean, these are issues that we need to get ironed out. And as far as I know, the plan today was to send the cap alternatives out and then work on the inshore offshore stuff, the rest of the stuff, right? So I don't understand how this would delay it any further than what we already have today. I would hope that between now and the September council meeting, when we come back with the final inshore stuff, that we could work on the stuff that the questions that have come up today. I wouldn't think it would delay it a bit. I think we could have most of the. I mean, I think Mary Beth saying buybacks, buyouts, whatever. I think we just need to consider that at the committee level, and I think we should have our answers in September, just like we are going to on the inshore Gulf of Maine stuff. So I don't think it delays a thing, and I think that's the way we should go.
Tom.
I was just going to make similar comments about the timeline. I really do think that this is a discrete chunk of work. I mean, in terms of underutilized species and the impacts, that was all going to get flushed out in the analysis anyways, and I don't think that's a new chunk of work. In terms of, detail stuff that we've dealt with, in these kinds of things before with the scallop IFQ and other things, there's a laundry list of circumstances that we should just have answers for, so that we're all up front about and clear on how each of these things are going to be handled. I don't think it takes more than a meeting or two, and I don't think it puts us past the September council meeting. I just want to say this to Rachel. I'm shocked and really pleased that we have the range of alternative measures that we currently do in this document. I mean, I think most of us on the committee 6 months ago, if anybody were laying odds, wouldn't say that we have a pretty significant range with low and high caps on permits, on individual PSCs. We've come an awful long way. This is not I don't think this sets us back. I think we should, first of all, appreciate the hard work of staff to put these things together, iron out these details, and still be on track. So I support this motion.
Doug.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to support this motion. I don't think it was a delayed tactic. I think it was. I think you honestly felt that there were some details that need to be worked out. I believe, based on the options that we put in, that a lot of those details are already taken care of. What's going to happen if we have a buyout buyback? I mean, there's options that can take care of that. The same thing, what happens if we're going to pass it down to our sons? That's a transfer of a permit. I think that's taken care of in the details already, personally. So I don't think we need to delay it for these particular reasons, so that's why I'm going to oppose this.
Mike?
Yeah, I'm very much along the lines of what Doug just said. I don't attribute any motives to anyone for whatever their position on this. I'm assuming that everybody's dealing in good faith. But I do basically feel that you get to a point of diminishing returns. And we're never going to have a perfect amendment. We've got some cap options in particular before us that seem to me to be ready for a vote up or down. That doesn't mean that further development and refinement might not happen, but I'd just like to move this along by seeing some decisions made. Thank you.
We've beat this to death. The one person that hasn't spoken has been John. You have a question for Rachel?
Yeah, Rachel, and more listening to the discussion lately, whether some middle ground might be that we report it or refer back to the committee till a date certain or a time certain, such as September the 15th, so we could revisit it in the late September council meeting, might be a way to kind of straddle the bridge here that exists. So, Rachel, do you think is that possible based on discussion to have just in your opinion, obviously, no hard and fast commitment, but.
Well, that's probably what this amendment or motion to substitute would accomplish. The committee would work on it over the summer and come back at the September council meeting.
Okay, yeah. No, just to address, some people think it's going to be years and years of delay, that I just wonder if we put that date in there and it'll at least be on the agenda for the September council meeting. May result in the same thing, but at least it'll be teed up for discussion again. So if the maker of the motion would accept a friendly amendment, I will put a new sentence at the end that the Groundfish Committee shall report back to the full council on these issues no later than the September meeting.
Okay, with you, Mary Beth and Laura. I don't think anyone's going to change their mind on how they're going to vote on this, so let's move the question here. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Those opposed? The motion carries 9-7. We're back to the main motion as substituted. Same sign. Those support the main motion as substituted. And those opposed? The main motion as substitute carries 10-6. I think it's time for a break. 10 minutes, and we're going to put it right back in Frank's lap.
as the area that they could identify as inshore area. And that area, 7015 to the 70, would not be.
In the front?
Hi, my name is Amanda Parks, an aspiring chef and student at the University of New Hampshire, also actively involved with Slow Food. I support this motion because I care about promoting a diverse fleet. I also listened to the testimonies recorded from April's committee meeting and believe that these fishermen can be stewards of our ocean to provide our local communities with the seafood we love to enjoy. Thank you.
Carl.
Yes, Carl Bouchard. I support the concept of inshore, offshore. However, I disagree with both lines that are there. 7015 is certainly inshore. 70 degrees doesn't go quite far enough. We already have a line at 6955, the eastern boundary of the Jeffries closure. I think this is more appropriate. And as you get further up the coast, it impacts too far to the southern. We also have another line that is the 12-inch roller closure, line that angles off up the coast of Maine. I don't recall exactly where that is, but it seems to me it was somewhere in the area where we want to be. I look forward to working as a groundfish advisor on this. I also feel that if there are any closures that are associated with this, that they should also apply to the recreational party charter as well. They always seem to say that they are impacted because of this. However, the small boat fleet has been impacted by rolling closures for the last 15 years. They've been shut down for many, many months because of rolling closures. I don't see the recreational party charter as being a whole lot different. It's bad enough that this segment is allowed into the Jeffries year-round closure at any time. I see creating more private fishing grounds for them is a bad move. Thank you.
Ron?
Ron Smolowitz, I support the motion. When did I first propose inshore offshore? 1989, 25 years ago. I just want to mention that the best way for this to work, if you look around the world and how they did this, is you need to think about designing the fishing system or the management regime and the gear that would work within an inshore environment under the current constraints. And I don't see anybody thinking about that yet. But, you know, you have some monies coming into the region. I'd really think that somebody should take the lead and design the system that would be managing that fishery within that inshore environment. And that's matching up the gear, the fishing power, the species complex, and a whole host of other matters. So it's very complex. Just by drawing a line, that's only the first step in a very long process. And I think it needs research and scientific support, not just meeting in you know, the council environment, to actually design what that inshore fishing vessel would look like, a small scale, you know, low fishing power, but economically viable unit. And to me, there's enough people around this region to be able to sit down and work out that concept. So this is a great step forward, but still a long way from the solution.
Aaron.
Aaron Doherty, Penobscot East Resource Center. I think anyone who's been at this since 1989 deserves a lot of credit. I just wanted to draw your attention to Document 4 and the groundfish materials. It's a PDT memo to the Ground Fish Committee, and Table 2 talks about cod landings by vessel class as a percentage of total fishing year cod landings in Area 514. I have to admit these tables and figures get pretty confusing, but what I think I'm taking out of this is between 2010 and 2012, vessels that are 75 feet and over increased from single digits up to 15 to 20%, and in the smaller vessels, the smaller size class, I think it's 30 to 50 or so, decreased. And you see a similar change with a dramatic increase in the mid-size vessels, 50 to 70 feet, 10, 15 years earlier. So, you know, different management changes have resulted in an increase of fishing pressure in this area, particularly when there's a lot of fish there. This is something that's got to be controlled in order to ensure that we can distribute fishing effort and make sure that we don't wipe out the fish in discrete areas. And I think that this motion goes a long way towards that. Just quickly commenting on some of the comments that were raised earlier, I'd have to agree with Jim Odlin's comments that a sub-ACL is something that should be explored. I think that makes a lot of sense. You also heard from Bill Gerenster about how this would put Bar Harbor in the offshore area, which, you know, for someone who works in Stonington and works with fishermen from the Penobscot Bay region east, that doesn't really make very much sense. It doesn't make sense to them. So I think that needs to be explored as well. You know, how does that become a portion of an inshore area? Because clearly if they're fishing close to shore around Mount Desert Rock, Scudic Ridges, some of those other places that historically were abundant fishing grounds, that's still an inshore area. So some of those need to be considered, but I think that this is a great step forward, and I urge you to support the motion.
Is there anybody else in the audience who'd like to comment to the motion on the board? Seeing none, back to the council. Rachel, you had your hand up.
Just to clarify things or ask the council if they want to clarify anything as we send this back to the PDT and the committee. In terms of the rationale, we've heard some discussion about where the line might be. Maybe it's not straight up and down. Maybe it's angled. Do you want to clarify anything about the rationale for defining this inshore-offshore line? Do you want to apply this to just Gulf of Maine cod, or the original motion that was passed in April said Gulf of Maine cod and other depleted stocks? We've been talking today mostly about cod, so clarification on that would be good. You know, how do you really intend to address concentration of effort withdrawing this line? Is it going to be the allocations proportional to historical catch? You know, how is that going to address concentrations of effort? And anything in particular about these gear restrictions? It's kind of an open-ended. There's lots of potential ways that gear could be changed, so.
Thank you for that advice. I got Dave Preble, David Pierce, Tom Dempsey, and Matt McKenzie so far. Dave.
Okay, thank you. For a long time, in fact, since this began, I've had a very jaundiced view of Amendment 18, because one of the things that scares me is the idea of making a designer fleet that winds up being less efficient than so to speak, free enterprise fishing would do. But this is the way to go. This gives me hope that Amendment 18 is salvageable. It needs to represent the historical fleet structure as well as the historical catch. And I would strongly recommend that as we and I don't think that this is necessarily the right parameters. We need to have, as somebody said, a full range of potentialities that also take into account the problems with the coast of Maine, which this, as it's written, does not. So, but those all can be added on as we develop a suite of alternatives to fulfill this. I would also say that there was one comment made about historical, looking backwards historically is one perspective, but we have to look forwards as well, and the changes that are taking place in the ocean are not the same ones that are taking place in the past. So I would suggest that any of these kinds of things that we put in be adjustable by framework, that we have any adjustments in where these things are and how they're administered to be frameworkable, so that we can tweak it as we go. But I'm completely in favor of this motion. I support it without reservation.
David.
Yeah, the committee did some good work on this issue, which I thought was going to be resolved today, but obviously it's not, in part because of some of the questions raised by Rachel, and they're very legitimate. Actually, the plan development team has raised many questions and highlighted some specific considerations specific to these particular issues on the screen, and frankly, the committee wasn't able to, in the time available to it, to deal with all of those particular considerations and answer all those questions. So there's still a lot of work to be done on this. I'm sensitive to what was said by those in the audience, lack of input by the GAP, lack of input by the RAP. They have some ideas they'd like to offer up. I have some additional ideas that I've already offered up in written form, but I'm not going to get into them today, I don't believe. I would rather have more time devoted to this issue, especially since the council had decided to wait until September to deal with Amendment 18, specifically the accumulation limits to deal with excessive shares. This is a very complicated inshore-offshore issue. The council recognizes its importance. That was reflected in the motion made and adopted at our last meeting. So I would make a motion to substitute, and that would be to remand the Gulf of Maine inshore offshore Amendment 18 measures back to the committee for further development and report back to the council with alternatives by the September meeting.
Before I ask for a second, I'm going to ask Rachel and Jamie for your reaction to this timeline.
Well, I assume the timeline is going to be the same, because under the former alternative, the existing alternative, the committee would be working on this over the summer, bringing back alternatives to the council in September. So that's, in terms of timeline, it's probably the same, but it looks like this substitute would allow the committee to do other things besides what's outlined in the existing alternative or motion.
I asked that question as a follow-up to the very busy schedule I know you all have this summer. And I just wanted to manage people's expectations of what product would be received at our September meeting. So, Jamie, do you have?
Nothing different than the timeline that Rachel just pointed out, but I just want to reiterate something Rachel said earlier about, you know, directly linking it to the purpose for these measures. The previous council motion spoke to concentrations of effort, and I just want to make sure we're not losing that discussion and whether or not that might need to be in this motion to both encourage the committee to develop these measures for September. We've had a lot of difficult discussion between the PDT and committee to make sure that we understood what the purpose was. So it would be important that we leave today with a clear understanding of that.
I mean, my sense would be the committee would be wrestling with the issues that Rachel laid out when we brought this issue back to the council. So is there a second to David's motion? Seconded by Frank. Terry.
So I guess I have a question to the maker. So that doesn't preclude us from working on all those things that were in the previous motion?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, good work was done. These are valid alternatives. However, as I said, the plan development team has asked some real good questions about this particular issue relative to creating inshore and offshore ACLs for all the different ground fish stocks. This is not just cod, this is for all the ground fish stocks. They've spoken, they've asked questions about, well, what about leasing? What about transfers of fish back and forth? How would that be addressed? How would we actually divide it up inshore and offshore? What years do we use? This is going to require, you know, a lot of work, which is fine. It's not my preference. As I've indicated, my preference is to go with something that is simple, very enforceable, and very effective regarding protecting spawning codfish, which, again, is the keystone species. That's really what this is all about. And those are the area closures that I've suggested affecting recreational and commercial fishermen. So that did not make it through the committee. This did. But it's got problems, very complicated. It needs to be worked on, as well as some other ideas that have been offered up by the audience. For example, Vito Giacalone got to the microphone and said that the Seafood Coalition, maybe the Sustainable Fisheries Group as well, have got some ideas as to how they, as inshore-offshore fishermen, big boats, little boats, mid-sized boats, how what they feel might be useful, workable. And then again, the gap and the wrap, they haven't weighed in on this. So I'm trying to be respectful of their particular positions and not restrict us just to these particular issues, but to go beyond that, the boundaries as well, the boundaries. So the motion, again, because we have until September, we're going to have two-day meetings. I love two-day meetings as well, Tom. I mean, why not? So make it a three-day meeting. This is an important issue. So I think the motion is relevant. And it does not result in any more plant development team work than otherwise would occur with this particular motion being passed. There's a lot more work to be done.
Tom Neese.
I'm struggling a little bit here. I'll turn to Jamie and Rachel, but I'm struggling to see how they're possibly going to get this done by September, bluntly. The original motion at least had some specific items that were identified to work on. And so that, to some extent, narrows the alternatives they have to examine. It seems, David, and I think from what you said, this is what you want, that your motion to substitute potentially expands the list of possible alternatives that would have to be considered and developed over the course of the summer. Now, maybe I'm misinterpreting it, but it sounds like that's what it would do. And so, you know, I was thinking to myself that with the original motion that it was probably a close call whether they'd make it by September. I don't know if they agree or not. But then when I look at this motion, and, you know, I look to them to weigh in here, but it seems like if you're opening up the door for a wider examination of inshore-offshore alternatives, it seems like there's not a whole lot of time, given the items that Jamie mentioned they have to work on, to really explore those and get those wrapped up by September. But I'll defer to them.
Yeah, you know, reading this again, this would require us to have a groundfish committee meeting before we really had any other PDT input. And, you know, the previous motion spoke to specifics, but here, you know, we would have to have a meeting, and, you know, whether that be a two-day meeting, a three-day meeting, maybe a four-day meeting, because we'll have to have, you know, the wrap, the gap, and the two-day committee meeting. So get ready. But it's definitely not something at this stage, based on this motion, the PDT would have any additional information to provide you. And so this, you know, it's going to be difficult to get to the September meeting in light of the previous motion. With this motion, at least the underlying motion had more direction. I don't know if there's something that could be added to that previous one to offer more of what you're looking for, Dr. Pierce, but, yeah, this will be difficult.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we've been talking about establishing this line. I think the first motion passed the committee in January in Danvers. Regarding the underlying motion, I'm not particularly opposed, but I'm not sure I'm in favor of the motion to substitute. I still need to weigh in on that. But the underlying motion, you know, we have two lines that were proposed in the committee, the 70 and the 7015, but there's also room in there to develop other lines. Given that we're concerned about effort concentration, let's look at where effort is hitting in this area. And in doing so, we might solve some of the problems as we work that line down east and as it comes down to the south. And so my input regarding, you know, clarity of what we would like would be, let's look at where the effort is falling and then use that to guide the development of a third possible line in addition to analyzing the 70 and 7015. Just my two cents. I'm still not... I agree that this motion, that there's a lot of work to be done here. I'll have to make up my mind on the fly.
Laura.
Okay, the most important thing is if we're going to have 2 to 3 day groundfish meetings, I hope the hospitality suite comes with it. Just saying. My term is really not officially done until August, so I don't want to leave you guys if it's not.
We'll be scheduling meetings soon for you.
Excellent. But I just can't let it go that this definitely delays Amendment 18. So I'm not going to insinuate that that's your underlying intent, but I'm just putting it out there that this puts a lot more work on the table and that apparently when people's ownership is at stake, that's a problem. But when we're going to carve up the ocean, it's okay. So that's all I got.
John.
Yeah, I think I've learned my lesson about ascribing motives.
Imagine being married to me.
Oh, my God.
And owning a business.
Here goes sleepless nights now. But, yes, this is a complicated amendment, Amendment 18. And it connects to so many things. It can get weighted down with all of the connections. And as it gets weighted down, gets heavier and heavier to lift. And I think the underlying motion gave people some information to work on. I think the substitute motion gives no information. I'm going to vote no on it. Because, you know, I just think weighting it down with more and more connections, yes, there are questions to be answered. And we'll never have all the answers to all the things that this amendment will connect to. I don't think we need all of the answers. The PDT is going to do some work. We're going to have more answers by September. Than we have now. But the first motion actually gives some direction. And I think that's what they need more than anything right now is some sense of direction.
Ellen.
I'm in favor of the original motion, and I'm a little concerned about Dr. Pierce's ambiguity. I would like to see the council give the Groundfish Committee a little more direction than the first. I would like to see two more sets of possible amendments added to that, but not an unlimited number. The two sets that I'd like to see would be options to declare into one area or the other, and you know how declare in for how much, like daily, weekly, per trip, 20 days. But I'd like to see a set of declarations, and I also would like to see a set of gear restrictions. And I think that right there, not that they would necessarily be chosen, but I think that we need to have those out there. We need to get public comment on them and move on with Amendment 18. So I am looking at not voting for Dr. Pierce's amendment, voting for the original one, but asking for a little more clarity on the original amendment. Thank you.
Tom.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I brought the original and underlying motion forward at the committee level, and in response to this council's request that the committee create alternatives, develop alternatives to address concerns about inshore and offshore. As I thought after that council meeting about how to do this, we basically have two pathways to get this done. One is output, and the other is input, right? So what I tried to do here, and I think what the committee discussed and ultimately strongly supported, is we'll create in parallel two different alternatives and again, develop them over time, and there will be revisions, and there are absolutely details to be worked out and concerns that will be raised and addressed. But you either set a sub-ACL that limits in a quota-based way how much fish can come out of that inshore area and let that thing sort itself out, or you try to achieve the same outcome through basically expanding some of the gear restrictions. And the things that we talked about at the committee level were similar to what's in place, you know, extending the roller gear requirements. I think some people had some other concepts about what to do with that. But, I mean, ultimately, we're going to have to pick one of those mechanisms, I think, to address this issue. And that's why I brought that aspect of the motion. And the with regards to identifying the line, there were several suggestions, and that the motion language is to include those, develop and consider those, as well as perhaps something else that that would make more sense. People brought up the issues with regards to the line and their impacts on down east. So I sort of feel like this is giving our PDT, you know, making a commitment to moving forward, giving our PDT the guidance to develop these things. We can always add alternatives, but I don't see us addressing this issue without developing these two pathways here. So I'm going to oppose Dr. Pierce's motion to substitute and support the underlying motion.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I was going to say much of what Tom just said. The problem that we want to avoid is having this too constraining at this point. And when I first looked at the 70 and the 7015, I thought, well, I won't tell you what I thought, it vulgar. But at any rate, the more I think about it, the more perfect that becomes, because it doesn't limit the north and south extension, at least in my understanding of how Tom meant it to be. And it gives the committee the kind of advice they need in order to move forward and consider all of these issues that have come up. I wouldn't want to make this too constraining. I think Tom hit it exactly right. I didn't think so at first, but I do now. And I would also point out that as far as Ron's involvement since 1989, I haven't known him that long, but for as long as I've known him, he's been saying exactly that the traditional, the historical, not traditional, the historical fleet was divided into inshore and offshore components, and those components actually were different industries, and they had much different characteristics. If you go back a century, that's what you find. In northern New England, in the Gulf of Maine, is two completely separate industries. It's true in southern New England as well. So I don't think we're going to recreate that in any short period of time. This is a worthwhile project, and it's a long-term project. And once we get it underway, and this is why I mentioned the thing about making the specific parameters frameworkable, because we're going to have to tweak it as we go along. We're going to find things that aren't exactly right. And it would be much easier to fine-tune this and get it right. It's a whole new direction, and it fits in with a lot of the other things we're doing, including ecosystem management. I think this is an excellent way to go. I think that Dr. Pierce's motion is far too constraining, and I won't support that, but I will support the underlying motion. Thank you.
Is there anyone on the council who has not spoken who wishes to do so? I've got Mary Beth, and then Doug, and then we were going to move the question.
My comment was just a request that we move the motion, that we call the question.
Doug.
And I'll be willing to pass on mine as long as after we vote on this I get a chance to comment on the underlying motion. If it, whatever the motion that comes up here.
You'll be first. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those who are opposed. The motion fails 3-13. Doug.
Yeah, and I agree with the direction that this underlying motion was going, with the exception that I think we should even give the PDT some additional directions on providing, A, alternatives to the inshore off, to develop alternatives, a range of alternatives for the inshore offshore lines, a range of alternatives for gear restrictions, and a range of alternatives for being able to declare into and out of the fishery, not so much just on a particular trip, but you could potentially have alternatives that would have you declared into and out of this particular fishery for days at a time or months at a time. And that's all I'm looking for, is a range of alternative that could include what's up there on the board.
So are you making a motion to amend?
Yes. So
help Joan out.
Joan, the motion to amend would be to amend, add alternatives, arrange, task the PDT with developing a range of alternatives for the inshore-offshore demarcation line, for a range of alternatives as to, let me get the, how long you would declare into or out of the area, the time periods. And a range of alternatives for the gear restrictions, and this is in addition to Tom's having an allocation range of alternatives.
You second that, Tom? Or Laura, excuse me. Seconded by Laura. Tom?
Just a point of information. If you read the underlying motion, the second alternative, that the language in the underlying motion is, to create an alternative that attempts to address concentrated inshore effort with the development of an expanded gear-restricted area. So that is already in the motion, gear restrictions as an alternative. So I think that's already covered, that part. I recognize that the declaration issue is separate, but I think at least that part of your amendment is already in the motion.
Yeah, all I wanted to do is make sure that there's a range of alternatives within that, and so if this captured it, if you need to take it out, that's fine, but as long as it's captured in there, it will have a range of alternatives for the gear restrictions in that area.
Tom?
So I think the only thing that's not captured in the underlying motion is the range of alternatives for the declaration, right? So maybe we can, I'm trying to get it. I think that's all that's not in the underlying motion is the range of alternatives for declaration. So maybe that's all we need to do is to amend this by adding somewhere in there a range of alternatives for the declaration in and out, or whatever language you use there.
That's fine with me. We can eliminate the rest of the motion to amend and just have also include a range of alternatives as to declaring in and out of the area. Time frames for declaring in and out of the area.
Okay with you, Laura? Ellen?
Oh, I'm in favor of the amendment, but I did have a point of clarification, and I know Rachel had asked if we were looking at only cod in this amendment or other stocks also, and as far as I'm concerned, it's not just about cod. It's about all the stocks. And so I'm a little concerned that we haven't answered that question.
Tom, is that included in the underlying motion?
It isn't. It doesn't specify. We spoke at the committee level only about codfish and the impacts, you know, because that was what we predominantly heard throughout Amendment 18 scoping and at the most recent council meeting, which prompted this action. My thought on that, I think that's an important issue. Maybe we can have that discussion perhaps after we vote the amendment up or down. The committee is, and maybe other committee members could correct me if I'm wrong, I think exclusively discussed this with regards to Gulf of Maine codfish. but understand that it's not clarified in the underlying motion.
Okay, so let's go back to council comments on the motion to amend. All right, any comments? Seeing none, those support the motion to amend, please indicate so. It's unanimous, 15-0. And David Pierce.
Motion to amend. Since it is desirable to give the plan development team guidance as to what we want them to look at, I would make a motion to add a. Okay, let's change. To put it a D, and it would be to establish, let's say, it should an alternative. Let's be consistent with A and B. So it would be, say, an alternative to establish a seasonal closure of the inshore area to reduce concentrations of effort on Gulf of Maine spawning cod.
Is there a second on the motion to amend? Second by Matt McKenzie. Tom.
Yeah, this was a concept that we discussed at the committee level. In response to a motion that Dr. Pierce brought forward, through a series of discussions, the committee decided to actually try to get at these spawning protections through the framework, the upcoming framework, and that this topic, as the council has tasked the committee, I think the consensus or the majority opinion was separate from the spawning protection issue. I think the committee unanimously supported expanded and improved spawning protections up there for codfish, and that's why in a subsequent committee motion you'll see we've tried to put that as a priority issue in framework 53. So that's where I think it gets done. That's where I think it belongs. That's where I think it gets done best and fastest. So I don't know that I'll support this amendment. I think where the committee ended up on that issue is the right place.
Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd have to oppose the amendment as it is right now, and only because when we spoke about it, it was in closing the entire inshore area, which goes from the shore to probably 100-plus fathoms. And I don't believe that encompasses that area at that time is going to be all for spawning cod. I would be in favor of maybe more discrete areas like you have with the whaleback closure in June in Ipswich Bay or something of that if you want to focus on concentrations of cod. I just don't think they're going to be encompassed in the entire area.
David.
Yeah, I appreciate Tom's point. He's quite correct. The committee felt it would be more important to move forward with some framework action to deal with the protection of spawning cod. So I heard that discussion. I was part of that discussion. However, I know that the committee is actually leaning towards, as noted by Vince, very discreet, very specific, relatively small areas to deal with protection of spawning codfish, and I continue to submit that that would not work. With whaleback, special situation. But based upon the research that my agency has done with the Nature Conservancy, with fishermen themselves, these fish are spawning in many different areas over a prolonged period of time, and it's a fool's errand to try to find very specific areas to target them and then to close them in a timely way, in a way that would be effective. In light of the situation we now have with Gulf of Maine cod, in light of the fact that we have a groundfish fishery failure that's due in large part to Gulf of Maine cod, something more significant needs to be done. And that's why I feel that an inshore area, however it be defined, should have some broad scope closure to protect spawning codfish. The months, of course, would be subject to discussion. I have my own feeling as to what the months should be based on research. Also, timeliness. This needs to be in place as fast as possible. Tom made a very good point at the Groundfish Committee meeting that he thought a framework actually would get something in place sooner than Amendment 18. Maybe that's the case the way Amendment 18 is going now. I want the quickest vehicle to use to get this in place. Frankly, Gulf of Maine codfish is at risk. State and federal scientists have said that. I think we all appreciate it. Something rather drastic needs to be done to deal with the stock, and this is what needs to be done, in my opinion. So, again, as part of Amendment 18, something that is not this little spot and that little spot, something that is more all-encompassing and that will be more effective, more enforceable, because small areas will not be enforceable.
Laura.
I opposed this at the committee level because it was asking for a widespread closure to all fishing in months where the fishermen are actually getting a return on their investment on fish like pollock. So it had tremendous financial impact. But I am going to oppose it today because I feel like it is adding on additional analysis of spawning locations and timing that, as Tom said, is better suited to the next framework. But to tack it into here on top of everything else we're having the PDT do for this amendment, it seems like it might be tipping the apple cart.
Mike.
Yeah, I guess I'd like some clarification in that the wording says the inshore area, and earlier on in the motion, the inshore area is defined as this area that's everything west of 70 degrees or 7015. So I'm trying to get clear whether David's intent is that the closure would be for some number of weeks, months, whatever it is, the entirety of what's the inshore area, or whether you're talking about an inshore area that would be somewhat different from that, depend on, you know, what would work in terms of conservation. Because those are hugely different interpretations.
David.
Yeah, it would be the inshore area as defined through the motion. Whatever boundary is picked, it might be the 70 degrees 15 minute line, and then within that area, some seasonal closure would be considered. Again, relying on plant development team work. A lot of work has been done already. It's not going to take much work at all, frankly. November through January, October through December, something like that. That's when we know through research, again, done by my agency and by others, when we see the spawning of codfish in the western Gulf of Maine, the inshore area, wherever it may be defined, and notably by 70 degrees 15 or by 70 degrees, however the boundary is established. Again, I offer it up as a motion to amend because obviously I'm passionate about this, and I'd like to see something done quickly and meaningfully for Gulf of Maine cod.
Ellen.
I appreciate your passion, Dr. Pierce. I do think that this is an inappropriate place to put a spawning closure because the underlying reason for this amendment is fleet diversity. And depending, the devil's in the details, on how this is put together, if the entire inshore area is closed, it is not going to promote fleet diversity. I think it could be very detrimental to it. So I'd like to put this in as a spawning closure, and I'd really like a lot more meat put on exactly how we're going to do that. Thank you.
Doug.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It makes much more sense to me to include something like this as an option in Framework 53 if the Groundfish Committee is already recommending to look at spawning closures in Framework 53, whether they be small, discrete areas or something like this. It seems like that way you would be having a single set of analysis in one document as opposed to having the same analysis or one set of analysis on spawning closures in Amendment 18 and another set of analysis on spawning closures in Framework 53. So it makes more sense to me to have this option as another option in whatever management action we have to look at additional spawning closures. It also gives, you may not, what is appropriate for fleet diversity setting an inshore offshore line may not necessarily be what is appropriate for protecting spawning cod. And so I would agree that we should be looking at that as an option, something like this as an option in a future management action as opposed to this one.
Is there anybody who hasn't already spoken on the motion to amend wish to do so? Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Priestley. I think Doug has nuanced that very well, and I agree with that, and I would oppose the motion to amend.
Okay. Those who support the motion to amend, please indicate so. And those who are opposed. The motion fails 2-13. Frank.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with two of the speakers from the audience. One was Carl and one was Patrick. I agree that, you know, we should probably have the information on the recreational, but I'm very concerned that we're going to tie up the PDT. I don't think there's any information anywhere on where the recreational, private recreational, catch their fish. I don't think it exists. So all we have is the party and charter boat information, and I'm not sure what we're going to do with it at that point in time, and I don't think the way the motion reads here, it says we will have observer and electronic monitoring. They're not even permitted boats. We can't require that on a private recreational boat. So we don't have the information to see where they're catching it, and we can't. So I think we're just going to be asking the PDT to do something that they can't do.
Further comments to the motion on the board. Seeing none, those support the motion as amended, please indicate so. And those opposed? Motion passes 14-1. Frank, you have another combo for us?
I believe that's all I have on 18.
Terry.
So I just want to have a brief discussion. I've been thinking about the windowpane flounder thing, and I guess I need to ask Gene a question or Mitch. If you deem a stock part of an ecosystem component of a fishery, does that have to be done in an amendment, or can we do that in a framework?
Yeah, I think that has to be a framework. I mean, an amendment. You know, I don't think there's any specific language to framework something like that. It's a fairly basic change to an FMP. So I think it would need to go through an amendment.
So I was thinking about having windowpane flounder, asking to at least have it analyzed to see if we could deem windowpane flounder ecosystem component of the fishery. The southern area, by the looks of what I saw, qualifies. The northern area right now doesn't. So, and if it needs to be in an amendment, I'm wondering if it would be appropriate to add that to Amendment 18, or it doesn't sound like that would go anywhere, so I'm wondering when we're going to be doing our next amendment.
We wouldn't be determining that until we discuss our priorities in the fall. I mean, you want to throw a hand grenade out there and see what happens?
Sure. Let's see. Well, I don't want it to fail. Okay. All right. Joni's got a motion.
Before you do so, Tom's got a.
Okay, Tom.
So, you know, Terry let us know ahead of time that he was thinking of doing this, and we've done a little bit of looking, but certainly not a real complete examination of whether these would qualify for ecosystem component species. So I don't know if I know the answer to that, but it seems like it's a stretch to argue that this fits into the current rationale and scoping for Amendment 18. And I would be interested to see if Rachel or you, Terry, perhaps can explain how adding this as an ecosystem component species fits into the rationale and reasons that we went out for scoping for Amendment 18. I don't know if Rachel can do that or not.
Terry.
Well, I would say it meets goal number two, in that enhance sector management and effectively engage the industry to achieve management goals, which is OI. I would say that was improve data quality, and then promote resilience and stability of fishing businesses by encouraging diversification, quota utilization, and capital investment. So I would argue that those could be two goals that this could address that we haven't.
Tom. So, Terry, are you making a motion on the board?
Yes, I am.
Could you read it, please?
I sure can. To add to Amendment 18, consider adding both stocks of windowpane flounder to the ecosystem component of the fisheries capable of catching windowpane flounder. And I wrote fisheries because it impacts lots of different fisheries that we manage.
So second to Terry's motion. Second by Dr. Pierce. Terry.
I know that we have some disagreement amongst our fellow council members that that I look at it, if we're pushing ABC on a stock that we aren't concentrating on, we're trying to avoid, then maybe the stock's in better condition than it really is, than what we see.
What we think.
It fits the criteria exactly, and I'll read a couple of the bullets off the I should have had this prepared. I wasn't prepared to throw the hand grenade though. I'm going to read you what it says for criteria for
General stocks in the fishery.
Tom, Terry, Tom's got them right here.
Oh, you do?
You want to let him sweat a little bit.
That's what I'm paid for. So I can read it, part of the National Standard Guidelines and Ecosystem Component Species, but it's quite lengthy, so I won't read the whole thing. There's a couple points to note. It says, to be considered for possible classification as an EC species, the species should, A, be a non-target species or non-target stock, B, not be determined to be subject to overfishing, approaching an overfished or overfished, C, not be likely to become subject to overfishing or overfished according to the best available information in the absence of conservation and management measures, and D, not generally be retained for sale or personal use. So I think we have two stocks of windowpane, northern windowpane and southern windowpane. Both have at one time or another, and some may still be, overfished and subject to overfishing. So it's difficult for me to understand how we're going to make an argument C, that it's not likely to become overfished in the absence. The other thing is when, you know, the implication seems to be perhaps that if you declare it as an ecosystem component species, you don't have to have an ABC or an ACL, which is true, but it doesn't mean you can just forget about it, because the language goes on to say that you're supposed to take measures to minimize bycatch of these species. So we need to keep that in mind, that it doesn't
completely eliminate our responsibility to try and manage and reduce catches of these things.
Chair, I'm going to go out to the audience for comments on the motion. Are there any comments from the audience? Drew.
Hi, it's Drew Minkiewicz, Fisheries Survival Fund. We strongly support this motion. This is the kind of thinking that you need to be pursuing more of, trying to get out of just the regular regime that we're in that are causing us so many problems. You know, we always talk about we need flexibility, and then the agency responds, well, there is flexibility. Well, this is some of the flexibility wrote in. Frankly, if this isn't in Magnuson, this is something ecosystem component species was created in the National Standard Guidelines, which is guidance. But it is a valid way to deal with this issue of a non-targeted, non-sold species such as windowpane. You know, you're prohibited from landing in them now, as is. Nobody sells them. Nobody wants to sell them. To Tom's point on overfished, I mean, currently southern New England isn't overfished. It's actually well above its biomass targets. It's substantially higher than its biomass targets. So southern New England checks all the boxes, no problem. Northern windowpane, a little more difficult. But the other thing, too, is National Standard 1 is it should. It's not a shall. So there is flexibility in making arguments for why you could go with the other stock as well. Another thing to consider is in 2009, NIMS did an analysis of all the groundfish species and looking at vulnerability and also their ecological roles. And windowpane was found to be of moderate vulnerability, very low on the scale. And also, importantly, it doesn't have an important role within the ecology, according to NIMS own science. It's a flat fish, like a lot of it's not very unique within the groundfish sector. So I'm not saying that means get rid of them, catch them all. What we're saying is nobody's trying to catch these things. No one wants to land them. No one wants to sell them. And we have a way here under law that allows us a little more flexibility in the way we allow the overall fishery to be prosecuted. Why don't we take advantage of that? And this is a possible way. So if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but we should definitely pursue this to see if we can actually use some of the flexibility that the agency is always telling us we have in the Act. Here it is. The door is there. Let's walk through it, see what's on the other side, see if we can figure out a way to make this work, and this is the first step in the process. So I strongly encourage you to take advantage of that.
Erica.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Erica Fuller from Earth Justice. I'd like to speak against this motion. I'm sure nobody's surprised. I don't think the Act contemplates us overfishing stocks, managed stocks, to the point that then we turn them into ecosystem component species so that we can avoid accountability measures that might have actually rebuilt these populations. Looking at the National Standard Guidelines as Tom read them and as they exist, this stock potentially doesn't meet any of these four criteria, and I would strongly urge you not to go forward with this motion. Thank you.
Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. We completely recognize the stretch that this might be, but at the same time, it might be a good exercise if the council showed that they were supportive of something like this, as we are, to see what the legal precedent is of use of this. Can it be undone later if the stock's found to be in worse shape than we thought it was? But for anyone to say that we don't have a pragmatic, you know, problem right now that we can't solve because we got 200 ton of window pane holding up the whole fishery, we know that there's a problem. You can't solve it scientifically overnight, and Framework 52 isn't going to be able to do it even with your best efforts. You've done everything possible. What would it cost to have this evaluated to see if it can be done? Doesn't mean ultimately you'll implement it or that it'll be accepted, but if the council shows a will that it's continuing to try to avoid these absurd results, you know, if it gets shot down, it gets shot down, but at least we'll all learn, because I've never heard about this one until today, actually. So we support the motion.
Bonnie?
Bonnie Brady, Long Island Commercial Fishing Association. Surprise, we support this motion. We're southern New England, where we're not represented. We have a stock that's completely rebuilt. Overfishing is not occurring. It is not overfished. The lovely picture that I have here, I'm not trying to be too dramatic, but maybe a little bit, goes from Long Branch to about exit 37 on the LIE, and then we go from Montauk all the way to Massachusetts. That is our groundfish fishery for southern New England. If we are limited so that we cannot catch windowpane as a bycatch for a non-retention, non-targeted species that's rebuilt, we can't catch groundfish, period. Common pool of fishermen from New York represent about 20% of all the groundfish. On the sector side, I think we're 10% based upon where our landing port is, but not where we're landing it, because some of New York's guys have Rhode Island permits. I tried and asked a committee, how about the mixed stock exemption? It's not overfished. I've been told, Dr. Sissonwine, you are the father of the mixed stock exemption. No? Anyway, the point being is we have, I believe, the perfect example to figure out what do you do when you've got a stock that's rebuilt in a complex where you catch them together. Anything that could be done. I've been to the committee meetings. Right now, these AMs, if we're given them, whether or not we go over by 21%, are completely punitive because it closes us down by 100% toward other groundfish. I don't think an accountability measure was supposed to go to that length. Anything that can get us there, there's no one repping us specifically from New York because we can't get a seat on the council. Not also another story that's old. Please, at least entertain it, walk it through the steps, because our ground fishery depends on it. And so do the other fisheries, which in 2015, they're going to get hit too. Thank you.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. I think this is an interesting idea. I mean, this ecosystem species idea is about flexibility. It hasn't been tested anywhere yet. I think it, you know, meets the criteria, at least at face value. And, you know, these are potentially very significant impacts, not only to the groundfish fishery, but, as Bonnie said, the fluke fishery, potentially the squid fishery and the scup fishery, if we ever get to Framework 53 and figure out what the goals and intent is there. So I think this is a good idea, and I think that the window pane fits the criteria ostensibly to move ahead, and we hope that you'll support the motion. Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the audience? Seeing none, I'm going to ask Rachel and Jamie the same question I asked on the last motion. Timeline. This is tipped it over upside down.
It's going to add more analytical work, which will make it harder for the PDT to get Amendment 18 done by September or come back with the range of alternatives. Framework 53, what are you going to take out?
Yeah, and do you want to do this instead of what you want to do in 53? Is it together? I'm a little bit unclear.
Tom, and then Terry, then Mike.
So just to be clear, I think we're probably looking at an implementation date of 2016 for Amendment 18 now, right? So just to be clear, you wouldn't see any of this stuff
until 2018 if this gets approved. I think there's still an unanswered question whether this really fits with the scoping that we did with the notice of intent. I know Terry thinks it does. I think we'd have to make that argument. So workload aside, in the short term, I think just to be clear, you wouldn't see any changes here until fishing year 2016, which would be after the updated assessments that we're due to get in 2015.
Terry.
I understand that, Tom. I think it's time to take charge of this and see if we can't make it a little more flexible. And I understand that the northern area is still overfished and overfishing is occurring. And I understand that doesn't qualify, but I didn't want to preclude it from the motion because we don't know what the next updated stock assessments are going to say. So I wanted it in there. And I just hate to see, I hate to see us work another on the framework 53, and we're going to be working on framework 53, looking at different components of the fishery. And I think that this right here is a good option for this particular stock. So that's, I understand that we're not going to see it until 2016, but that's better than not seeing it until 2020. So,
if I might, Mr. Chair, and this relates to, I think it was Rachel who said, what are you taking out of Framework 53? I think there's some proposals in Framework 53 coming from the committee related to window pane. Aren't there?
That was a council motion.
Right. So I guess my question is, if you try and do this in the amendment, are you taking that out of Framework 53, or are we going to do both? Right. Isn't there a motion for Framework 53 to do something with window pane AMs? Isn't that coming or already been done?
The motion happened at the council already, but, you know, we have it as a place in line for 53.
Mike.
Yeah, just formally for the record, I had nothing to do with writing the mixed stock exemption in the current National Standard 1 guidelines, although I did have a fair influence on the previous version. I have been fairly open in my criticism of the current version with respect to the mixed stock exception, and I do hope as things go forward there's some further evaluation and refinement to make it more useful. With respect to ecosystem component, I'm sympathetic to the motivation behind putting forward such a motion. It is clear from the National Standard 1 guidelines, as well as what we were told by Gene, that it has to be an amendment, not a framework. It's clearly stated in the National Standard 1 guidelines. There are confusing things about it in the National Standard 1 guidelines because the guidelines talk about whether the stock is overfished or not. But the guidelines also say in a table that the terms, the reference points associated with overfishing and being overfished do not apply to ecosystem components. So you've got sort of a catch-22. If you are an ecosystem component, those things don't apply. But if you want to become one and you already have them, then I guess they do apply, which obviously requires some refinement in thinking. Bottom line is I won't support this proposal, not because I disagree with people who think it's time to think out of the box and address some very difficult problems, but I don't think this is the way to do it. As has been pointed out, there are workload issues. As has been pointed out, it wasn't the intent of Amendment 18, and there's a very practical element behind my thinking. If you really want to pursue flexibility through something like ecosystem component, you want to be very careful to make sure you do it right and defensively, because the last thing I would want to see is to do it in a half-baked way with litigation that follows and sets a precedent that will make it even more difficult to do it properly sometime in the future. So let's not do it unless we can really do it right and have gone through and had the time to think through all the implications and the analyses such that it's as defensible as it can possibly be. because if it fails, then it'll make it harder to ever do it again. Thank you.
Tom.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I didn't write the mixed stock exception either. Just want to put that. I didn't. Not the first one, the second one, probably not the next one. To this motion, you know, I think people want to address this issue, but as I look at it, I think, you know, this approach ends up walking around the issue. And I actually think we can solve the challenges with window pane. We need the updated science and assessment. We need to create sub-ACLs for non-ground fish components of the catch. They need AMs. And then we need the mechanisms to stay within those sub-ACLs. I think we can get there. I think Framework 53 will take us another step. I just think I worry that this walks around that, and we have an opportunity to actually to manage this stock, and it would achieve our goals, and I think we should. So I'm going to be opposed to this motion.
We've got John Bullard and Matt McKenzie, and then we're going to move the question.
I'm against this motion. I understand the intention. When I hear, let's send it out, maybe it'll get shot down, I hear people calling my name. There are a lot of questions. One is, what does this have to do with Amendment 18? That's been raised. The other is, does this qualify? Is it a stretch or is it an actual break? And that's something that to be determined. And is that true for Northern? Is it true for Southern? The motion says both. It doesn't say either. It says both. There are broader questions about, you know, I thought ecosystem was trying to get away from single species management, and, you know, are we trying to sacrifice one stock in the interest of more economically valuable stocks? But at any rate, because if it comes to us, we are going to have to look at these issues and take time legally to look at these questions, we're going to not support the motion.
Matt, last word. Okay, thank you. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. 3, 4, 5, 6. And those opposed? 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 9. The motion fails 6-9. Frank and Rachel, is there any other business with Amendment 18 today? Seeing we're at the hour we're at, we're not going to take a break. We're going to turbo right into Framework 53.
Okay. Do we have a short presentation for 53? I'm not even. All right. We've only got a... Well, Jamie, do you have a short presentation?
Thank you. So, as has been discussed already today, we're hoping you'll initiate Framework Adjustment 53, which will likely include specifications and management measures. Provide you a brief outline here. We'll go over the timeline, possible items for inclusion that the Groundfish Committee discussed at the meeting last week, and then our goals for today. It's our hope that you'll initiate 53 today. We'll then take the time from July to September to develop both specifications and measures and bring those back to you to look at measures to include in Framework 53 at the October meeting. And then we'll be continuing to develop the NEPA analysis with the Council scheduled to take final action on 53 in November. So here's the list of items that were discussed at the committee meeting. The first two are regulatory requirements, which include if there are any status changes for groundfish stocks and specifications for several of the groundfish stocks, including Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank winter flounder stocks, pollock, Gulf of Maine haddock, Georges Bank yellowtail flounder, Eastern Georges Bank cod, and Eastern Georges Bank haddock. The list of management measures was discussed at the committee level, and this list has been organized in priority order based on discussions at the committee. The first was the council motion that the committee also discussed, which was to allocate the windowpane flounder ACL to subcomponents and develop AMs, and this would apply to both stocks. The second was to expand the Gulf of Maine cod intro and 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 the